a golden god!
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 83 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
Nice of you to show up, Gemma.
Whoops.
But we'll leave that. We'll come back to that.
Let's be nice.
Yeah, let's be nice for now.
Lovely.
Let's tell the people what's on the show.
We're going to be kicking off the episode with our top three underrated actors and actresses.
Our rewatch this time is Almost Famous.
And we've been to see Murder on the Orient Express, which will be our main review.
This time around, we're going to be movie masturbating to the one, the only, Mr. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, I need to take a breather on
that
one.
I know, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's tense.
What are we going to come up with?
Stay tuned. That's all you can do.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, talking about tense, talking about being on the spot, it's all about our quiz. It's the incredibly successful Kakanori.
Kakanori, indeed. And who's who this time around?
Mm. I'm going to be the games master.
Oh, yeah.
Which means I can't lose. But I could.
You can.
But I can dent my winnings from last week.
Yeah.
Possibly. And I'm going to be the judge.
Which means I'm the player. And I look forward to it. You're going to screw me over.
Look already of just fear.
Good Lord. And we'll have all the usual goodies that you used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We will have our prize giveaway. We'll have listener questions. And we'll have our pop culture recommendations of the week. Before we do that, though, I think Mark and I need to have some stern words with young Poochie over here.
Uh-oh.
Where the hell were you?
They weren't going to put me on a plane and let me fall to the sky to my untimely death.
Why? Why not?
I don't know. Safety, health and safety. You know what they're like these days.
So there was an actual issue with the plane that prevented you from getting back to England?
The engine. Apparently there was an oil leak.
That little thing, the engine.
I know.
Bit of like sellotape on it. It's fine, isn't it?
Turn it off, turn it on again.
How did it feel listening back to just me and Ben carrying the episode without you?
So bizarre.
Yeah. It's pretty so good, wasn't it?
You know what? You guys did a really good review. Yeah. So it was like going back to square one again when I was just a meagre fan.
And that's how I want to look at it from now. You are back at square one and you're a fan.
Mark, let's just have a quick sidebar. So even she's admitted that it worked.
I know. So should we do the review today, just me and you again?
Yeah, and the rest of the show.
Yeah. Cool.
Anyway, Gemma, Mark and I have got something we need to tell you.
What the hell's going on here?
Enough of that shit. Tell us about Vegas.
Sure. Vegas was amazing. So good. It's just non-stop. There are no clocks in any of the casinos. There's no chairs, so you can't just sit down if your feet are hurting. And you can pretty much just get free drinks if you're playing the cards in the slot machines. Absolutely fantastic. I got to see Cirque du Soleil, which was mind-blowing. Very, very incredibly... I got to go to the Grand Canyon in a helicopter of all vehicles.
I saw that. I saw the pictures of that. I was like, what?
That was so sweet, honestly. You just go over the canyon and they do these really cool things like nearly barrel rolls. Not like, you know, where they're doing 360 flips in the sky, but that was pretty ace. And the pilot, a man called Keith, who works for Maverick Helicopters. Keith, you're the man. We love you and we bloody miss you. But great.
Did Keith get his...
Keith. Oh, seriously.
Yeah,
Keith,
you're loving him a bit too much just for a guy that...
That's Keith. But it was a great old time. The people of Las Vegas are absolutely wonderful, considering what happened a few weeks ago as well. They are very lovely people. They're very strong. And yeah, just a wonderful, wonderful city.
I don't like the idea that you've gone on holiday and rub it in. Like, it doesn't feel the right time of the year.
Yeah.
It's coming to a close of the year and you're going off on this really hot, amazing holiday while me and him are in the cold.
Oh God, it was sweltering. It was sweltering out there. Woof.
Yep.
Yeah. Good day!
Now you're back to jolly old England.
There's one thing I do want to ask that it's actually genuine, and we're not going to rip you for the rest of the episode. That's it now. Wow. You're forgiven. Wow. Strike eight. You're all right at the moment.
And the rest.
Yes. Where's our presents?
Oh, I'd spent it all. I put it all in red.
That is shocking. Not even a present to say, sorry, guys. You know, I know I messed up. You covered it again. Yeah. The response on social media was probably more popular than when I was on the episode. And here's a present to say, sorry.
This is it. She could have at least got us some tat from Duty Free, but no.
At least we've got our own presents today.
We have indeed. What's up in here?
So we've got some toffee apple English cider from our good old original best friends, Brothers.
That's Brothers.
Thank you for coming back and rewarding us because, you know, you went away for a while, you ignored us, and we thought, have you gone? But then they reminded us why they're the best and the kings of cider.
It is the best flavour in the world with toffee apple too.
It is absolutely gorgeous. Before we fall into a hole of, you know, plug-in things for everyone, Gemma, have you actually been to see Thor, the film that Mark and I reviewed in your absence?
I have.
Give us your brief thoughts. What did you think and give us a score?
Well, I think it's an 8 out of 10. Yes, I heard the review, Mark.
That was pretty good.
Everything you said, I absolutely agreed with. Best Marvel film of the year. Absolutely fun, hilarious. Chris Hemsworth is the man. Although I disagree with one thing.
Oh, yeah.
I actually really like Korg.
Okay, that's fair.
I like Korg. I thought he was a joy. But yeah, best Marvel film of the year. And should I just wrap it up and give you a score? Because everything I wanted to say, you said.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
9 out of 10.
Well, there you go. So you've finally now, 2 weeks late, have the official skip to the end score for Thor Ragnarok, and it's 9 out of 10. Yeah.
Can I add as well, Taika Waititi, actually, the one thing I loved about the film is he had two actors from his previous films into this one. So we had Sam Neill, who is in Hunt for the Wilder People, mm-hmm. involved in it, and also one of the henchwomen of the Grandmaster.
Yeah.
She's been in Eagle vs. Shark and Hunt for the Wilder People, and I liked that.
Where do we go from here?
Oh, let's get started.
Topic this time around is our top three underrated actors and actresses. So we're going to be celebrating those people that aren't really recognized that much. We know they do great work, but where are the awards? Where are the plaudits? So on this episode, we're going to celebrate that. Mark, I want you to go first, and I want you to tell me your first underrated person.
Paul Giamatti.
Oh, excellent choice.
Superb.
I was expecting one of you maybe to have him.
I haven't got him,
but I agree wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm.
A great, great actor. And, you know, to be fair to him, he's not like no one's ever heard of him. And he does get good recognition. But for me, he's one of the most versatile actors out there. If you look at some of the roles he's been in, the big, big one that's just crying out there is the portrayal of the character of Miles in Sideways.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, yes.
Where you see this guy who's got the hardest task to kind of portray depression in a good way without making it comical or over the top or just false. I actually believe this guy was suffering and had this resentment for himself. And the whole way through, my heart was just wrenching for him because I just felt so sorry for the guy. He's such a sad character, but I always wanted the best for him. But then you can put him in stuff like Shoot 'Em Up, which is just a stupid beer and pizza over the top action film. You can stick him as Santa in Fred Claus and he does it well.
That classic.
But most recently as well, we saw him in Straight Out of Compton.
Oh my god, he's the manager. Oh my God.
That's the sort of range I'm looking at. And there is other stuff as well, stuff like The Illusionist, Lady in the Water, which I always think that's good. He shit the bed with Amazing Spider-Man 2. I don't understand why they stuck him in Rhino for 5 minutes of the film?
It's because they were building up to an additional film afterwards that he was going to have a major part in, but because that film was so shit and because they went a different way with the Spider-Man character and brought him into the MCU, they just had to abandon that.
Wow.
Good.
But yeah, I'm not disappointed by that because what I did see of him, I just thought, you shouldn't be doing this. You're better than that. But I never see him win any Oscars. I never see him out there. I don't see him in enough films. I don't see him getting the praise he deserves. Like whenever I tell people about Sideways, they're like, yeah, he's amazing in that. Why did he not do more serious roles? Why is he only doing a film every few years? Yes, I know he's been doing TV and stuff like that, but he's not given the credit that he deserves at all.
He's a typical character actor. He's one of those guys that's not really a leading man because of his looks. You know, this is Hollywood. It's not me saying that. It's Hollywood. But he's a fantastic character actor, and he does a lot of smaller, independent, quieter films, and he's always brilliant. He always knocks it out of the park. One of the things that made me laugh is when I was at the Edinburgh Festival earlier this year, I went to see an American comedian called James Adomian, who was absolutely brilliant, and he does impressions as part of his act. But he does impressions of people you would never expect. So one of the people he does an impression of is Paul Giamatti. Which impressionist does Paul Giamatti? But he does it absolutely perfectly. He nails it. And I love that. I love that there's someone else out there who clearly loves him as much as we do.
I was about to say, what was the impression like? Because I just can't think of how you do it. I suppose it's just quite placid, isn't it? Yeah. In kind of that, he has got quite a distinctive voice.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Special shout out to American Splendor.
Oh, great, yeah.
When he starts talking like this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, great guy, great guy.
There's the bar set quite high. Mm-hmm. So, Ben.
My first pick is Michael Shannon.
Oh my God! Wow!
So Michael Shannon is best known, I would imagine, as Zod from Man of Steel. And he's brilliant in that. It's not a great film. I like it, I suppose, the film. But he's one of the best things in it. He's also known as Agent Van Alden from Boardwalk Empire. But he's been in lots and lots of other things. He's been in The Woodsman, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Bad Lieutenant, The Iceman. He's brilliant in that. A Nocturnal Animal was recently he was in.
Incredible.
And he's absolutely fantastic in that. Now, to say that he's underrated, I suppose, you know, you could argue with me on this because he has been nominated for 2 Oscars. So the Academy recognises him, but I don't think the world at large does. I don't really think he's a household name at this point. You know, and if he is, it's because people know him as Zod. But I think the guy's amazing, and he really excels at playing intense, serious men, which is why he's usually on one side of the law or the other. He's usually a lawman, an FBI agent, or a cop, or he's an unhinged psychopath on the other side of the law. But anyone who's serious and intense, if you need that, you get Michael Shannon in. He's been getting some great early reviews for a film that's coming out soon. It's the new Guillermo del Toro movie, The Shape of Water.
Cannot wait for this.
Yeah, and he plays, again, sort of a governmental arsehole in this, and everyone's saying he's one of the best things in it. Whenever I see a new film that's coming out, and I always look at the advanced cast list, who's going to be in it, if ever I see that Michael Shannon's name's on the cast list, I'm like, yep, I'm seeing that one. Because I know he will always deliver. I know he never, ever disappoints. Love everything he does.
Arguably the best thing in Midnight Surprise too.
I don't know what that is.
Ah, that was with Kirsten Dunst. It was about a little kid who had these wonderful and amazing powers, so they were trying to hide him from, like, federal agents.
It wasn't called Midnight Surprise, was it?
Midnight Express?
Midnight Special?
Midnight Special.
There we go.
Midnight Surprise.
Oh, bollocks.
I was sitting there thinking, what's she on about?
You didn't get it either.
Yeah, but now it's clicked.
Gemma's had a few Midnight Surprises.
It's Nocturnal Animals for me, Ben. That's the one that really hit. And when you first said his name, I was like, who? And then you're like, Zod. And I was like, oh, okay. Exactly. But yeah, I completely forget that the same guy that played Zod is also that. But my God, he's absolutely awesome. And I just want to see more now. I've seen him in that serious role. And I think to see him working along Jake Gyllenhaal, you know what I mean? It's not easy. God. That's your sign, kind of, oh, shit, I've got someone bloody good to try and face off against. Now I'm just excited to see what he's going to do next.
And again, I think we're going to find this to be a pattern as we continue with this topic. He's another one, like Giamatti, who's a character actor. He doesn't get a lot of lead roles. However, have you seen Iceman, where he plays the lead? He's like a hitman.
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
Go and check that out. That's a good movie.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Wicked.
So I'm going to kick off with my first choice, and it's a lady. It's a British actress, a British comedy actress, and her name is Alice Lowe. Has anybody heard of her?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah,
tell
amazing.
Me now and I'll know. It'll click.
No worries. So she started out in the TV comedy show, the legendary TV comedy show, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, as Dr. Liz Asher, who is one character, and I suppose she played her as an actress, as Madeline Wool. And she's just wonderful. She's by far one of the best things about it, which is very hard to say because the whole cast are great. But she's also popped up in other comedy shows such as Black Books and The Mighty Boosh. However, her breakthrough, you could say, was in Ben Wheatley's Sightseers.
Yeah.
That was her first major serious role. And that film is hers to command. She's absolutely wonderful. Maybe a future rewatch in the future.
Oh, yeah. I'm on board for that.
I'll pop that on the list. And she's just started getting a little bit of recognition because she wrote and directed a film called Prevenge, which starred herself while she was pregnant, and it's about her unborn baby telling her these crazy and maniacal things in order for her to kill these random strangers. And she surprised me with her dramatic turn because I do know her for her off-the-wall quirky comedy. She's a woman that's not afraid to sort of, I hate to say this, but ugly up. You see some of her roles and she's unrecognisable. But she totally deserves more credit. You know, she's an all-rounder. She can act, she can make you laugh, but she can deliver the goods when need be. And it's criminal that she's not in any more body of work. I think she's done bit parts, things like Hot Fuzz as well. She's one of the shop girls. She's also in Paddington as a bit part. But she needs more gravitas.
She is very good. And I haven't seen Prevenge yet. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
It's good.
You know our podcast. Now we've talked about it. She'll be cast as the lead role in the Marvel film next week.
You
know
how it happens.
I don't know much about her. Yeah. I want to contribute. I want to be like, oh yeah, I love it, but I don't know enough. So that's proving your point.
Definitely. Start off with Garth Marenghi's Dark Place and go from there.
Yeah, I remember watching bits of that, but
good.
So funny.
Look at your boat. You're like, watch it now.
Mm-hmm. I hope to see it on your Skip to the
That or Iceman.
Future.
What do I watch tonight?
Oh my, that flip a coin.
Both.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a female as well. So my actress is Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Great, great, great.
She's awesome.
She's amazing. Now, we all remember her for her portrayal of Ramona Flowers in the incredible Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. But there's been a lot since then. The worst thing that I hate about the remake of the Thing film, which is the 2011 version, was it there was no need for it, but I can't take anything away from her in it. She did a good job of polishing the big huge shit that was put in front of her. But also, I've seen a film recently called Faults that she's in, which I thought she was great. She played this character of Claire. She's also played alongside Jesse from Breaking Bad. I don't care if he's called Aaron Paul, it's Jesse from Breaking Bad in Smashed.
That is a great film.
And
she's
drunk the whole way through, pretty much. And I think someone that can actually act drunk does very, very well when they're not drunk. Anyone that does it in TV or low-budget stuff is always the over-the-top, silly, way, way over-the-top, tripping over. She does it in the subtle, depressing way of that's not an enjoyable way. She's drowning her sorrows, and it's an amazing performance. But even most recently as Michelle in 10 Cloverfield Lane, that film has her and John Goodman for an hour and a half. There's no one else. There's them two stuck in this bunker, and you've got to go alongside John Goodman, who, in my opinion, is one of the greatest actors out there. And she does it for the whole time. I'm mesmerised by her on screen. She's going through fear. She's going through anger. She's even going through kind of an attraction feeling. And you're sat there with her going, I really feel for you. I want you to be okay. We don't see enough of her. We see it little bits. Even now when I said her out loud, I'm trying to think, I've not seen her in the news recently about doing much. I know she's doing the new Fargo TV season, but that's about it. There's not enough.
She was absolutely brilliant in season 3 of Fargo. It's a great show, and she was one of the best things in that season. Have you seen season 3 yet?
Not yet, no.
Oh, I'll get involved. I will do.
She's great.
Absolutely great.
Oh my God, I feel like I'm just going to be saying the word great all throughout this topic. But yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane, that's such a good film. Really great. Again, great.
Apart from the end. In my opinion, remember, we are Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Cool, this is good so far. It's a nice discussion, a bit more interesting than the usual stuff.
So my next pick is Sam Rockwell.
Oh, my God.
Okay, now drop the mic, walk home.
He's done.
Done.
So I talked about him a little bit when we talked about Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, and I said then he's one of the most underrated actors going, and I stick by that. I think to the public at large, he's probably best known as Justin Hammer in Iron Man 2, or as the lead role in Moon.
Yeah.
And Moon is one of the most underrated films ever made. It's a brilliant film from Duncan Jones, and again, a future rewatch has to be.
Absolutely.
Love that movie. You might also recognise Sam Rockwell from The Green Mile, Galaxy Quest, which is a great film.
Oh my God.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which a lot of people didn't like, but I thought it was a good, fun film, and I thought he was brilliant in it especially. And, of course, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. So he's been in some big, big movies, but always in a smaller role. He has such a quirky, unique style, and he has this really kind of weird throwback vibe. He's kind of loungy, sort of. He reminds me of kind of a Rat Pack-esque character. He's just so cool, and I want to go and have martinis with him. That's the kind of guy I see him as. He reminds me kind of like Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt has that same kind of loungy vibe at times as well, but I enjoy Rockwell's work more. But I think that's why he gets so few lead roles, because he is entirely unique. He's, again, not someone who you would necessarily see as a lead. He's done a few things as the lead, like Moon and Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, but he's better as a utility man in the team as part of the ensemble, and he's just so, so good. And he's got a film coming out soon called The Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
I cannot wait for this.
No, me neither. He's in it, Frances McDormand's in it, and it's getting great, great notices.
Woody
especially
Harrelson,
from him.
I think.
Yeah, Woody's in it. And it's from Martin McDonagh, who did In Bruges. Mm-hmm. So that's enough of a reason to want to see it, and I think he's going to kill it.
I couldn't agree more. Unfortunately, he did star in the remake of Poltergeist.
Oh dear.
But that's not his fault, because it's Sam Rockwell, and Sam Rockwell is pretty cool. But yeah, Moon, it is pretty much just him.
Mm-hmm.
For an actor to carry an entire film for a good hour and a half, 2 hours on their own back, totally deserves the credit. And this guy's a shining example.
I completely forgot until Ben said Green Mile. He's so loony in that. And so
with the moon pie.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's so good.
Yeah.
Brilliant. But it was a great, great performance. And I completely forgot that was him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
He is one of those guys who can just completely inhabit a role that you can forget that it's him.
Yeah.
He's a great actor in that way. And I just want to see more from him, more lead roles.
Fingers crossed. So I'm going to stick with the character style actor. I hope this one brings a smile to your guys' face. Stephen Root.
Oh, I love Stephen Root.
So funny. Who's that?
You'll know. Well, when Gemma says the things he's been
this
in,
is
you'll
good.
Know.
I'm learning loads.
So he is known for a lot of character roles. So he's most notable as Gordon in Dodgeball and Milton in Office Space. There it is.
Now he knows. And he's in Red State, and he's actually good.
Yeah, he's in everything. Yeah. Stephen Root pops up everywhere.
You should check out his IMDb page. There is about 130 different things he has been in, both TV and films. I think in terms of TV, he was recognisable as one of the voices in King of the Hill by another Mike Judge project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Boardwalk Empire 2. But every character he brings is just something completely new and interesting from what he's previously done. He's not really recognisable by name, again, like with Alice Lowe, but as soon as you see his face, or as soon as someone goes, oh, it's so-and-so from so-and-so, then the penny drops and everyone goes, bloody hell, yeah, I know who Stephen Root is. I think he deserves much meatier and bigger roles, because he is so synonymous with comedy. You think back to when Robin Williams was announced as the lead for 1 Hour Photo. People didn't think that was going to work, but it turned out to be one of his best roles he ever did in his career. Give Root something like this. Let's give him a real dramatic, real sort of off-kilter kind of character, and I think he would slay it. It's the time for Root.
It's the time for root. This is like a political campaign.
It's the time for the root to grow.
Yeah. Root, root, root.
Root for him.
Yes.
But yes. Now, as soon as you said Milton, I was like, yes.
I watched it recently on the plane back home, and it's so good.
Amazing. And yeah, you're right. He can't really have much range. I think he's always got to be this kind of the comical. I can't imagine him doing too serious.
See, I disagree. I've seen him play really serious characters. You'll see him quite often play judges. Because he's got that kind of look as a powerful, commanding man. He has done a bit of that, but he's more known for his comedy, certainly. Mm-hmm. Most recently, I've seen him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He plays Boyle's dad, and he's hilarious.
Oh, yes, he does, and he gets on with so-and-so's mum as well. Like Tina? Oh, one of them, I can't remember. Gina.
There's another Gemmerism. It's 2-0 at the moment to you. I've not
see,
done
what, hang on. Midnight Express. I'm not letting that go. No.
Oh, it's my final choice. It's a big one, and he isn't too underrated, but I think when I say the name, you'll both go, you've actually got a damn good point.
Go on.
Cillian Murphy.
Awesome.
You got a damn good point.
My God, this guy was actually destined to be a rock star. He turned down a record deal to become an actor, so he was there, he was ready to become the next big thing in music, and he said, no, I want to pursue a career in acting. When he had that breakthrough in Danny Boyle's The One and Only, 28 Days Later, I saw him on screen and I was like, who the hell is this guy? I want to see everything he's ever done. And I was like, oh, he hasn't done anything. This is it. This is the start of a big career for him. Then to bring him back in the absolute sci-fi masterpiece, Sunshine.
Oh,
we talk about Moon.
Oh my God, yes.
Moon and Sunshine. Those two films are just incredible. And again, like you just commented, he carries that film on his own for most of the movie. Yeah.
What a double bill that'd be.
Oh my
I'd
God.
Happily watch those.
Maybe we do that as a rewatch.
Please.
What's better, Night, Moon or Sunshine? That'd be good. Let's do that.
Actually, yeah, back
that works,
in.
Man. It works.
Yeah.
If it works, we're doing it. But not only that, then he got to work with the master himself, Christopher Nolan, and we all love the Batman trilogy. To see him as Scarecrow, I think I've never seen someone put so much effort into kind of a serious role. He made me fear for Batman's life. He made me fear for everything. When he put that kind of bag on his head, I know it's a lot of CGI and stuff, but I really believed in him, every movement he did. But then again, we got spoiled. We got Inception. Everything he does, he seems to really connect to. I've never seen him kind of just put in a half performance where I've gone, oh my God, this guy can't really be asked. What's he doing this for? He's only took on roles that deserve his acting skills. And I think when I watch him on screen, every single time, I believe that he's that character. I forget he's Cillian Murphy, and that's credit to him.
It is. And he must be good if Nolan keeps casting him. Because he was in Dunkirk as well as The Cowardly Soldier, and he was fantastic in that, yeah.
Yeah, he's got great looks for the camera too. He is. What's the best way to say it? The camera loves him.
I love him. His eyes are incredible.
Yeah, but he is, and he's engaging. So when you do see him in all these different kind of roles, you as a viewer are invested, you're engaged. I mean, he's done some real far out stuff as well in the past. I think he did Venus and Furs.
Oh, yeah.
He was in that. And again, he's like this sort of 1970s androgynous kind of pop star. But again, he's great because you believe in the character because of his performance. He's wonderful.
And even when he's done films that you don't expect him to do, he's been the best thing in it. So there's a kind of a horror thriller called Red Eye where he's trapped on a plane.
Not a bad film.
That's exactly it.
Good.
It should be there with sort of Final Destination, these silly sort of horrors. But he's genuinely scary. I love the guy, and I even seen him on good stuff on TV. So what's that old BBC One
Peaky
stuff?
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders. What I've seen of that, I've only seen a couple of episodes, but he's unbelievable. So credit to him. I just want him to be in everything.
Yeah, I think he's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Final one, Ben.
And I'm going with William Fichtner. So again, it's one that you might not know by name, but you'll know him. You would absolutely know his face. So he's probably best known as the bank manager at the start of The Dark Knight.
Oh,
I love that guy.
Yeah, but he's also Mahone in Prison Break. He was absolutely brilliant as the unhinged FBI agent in Prison Break. He's also been in a lot of movies over the years. He was in Heat, he was in Armageddon, Equilibrium, Elysium he's in recently, and Crash. He does a lot of small roles. He does smaller roles than the previous people we've mentioned who will get leads at times. Fichtner never really gets leads. Sometimes he's in great films, sometimes he's in absolutely dogshit films, but he's always great. He's always one of the best, if not the best thing in them. He's similar to Shannon in that he strafes the line of lawmen and villains. He often plays FBI agents and cops, but he also plays psychos and hitmen and so on because he can do both sides of that line equally comfortably. And he was essentially both in Prison Break because he starts off as an FBI agent, but then he becomes unhinged and becomes a criminal himself, and he's brilliant in that.
Ben, don't go mad at me now. because I know I haven't watched The Wire, but yeah. I've never watched an episode of Prison Break.
That, it's not the same as not having seen The Wire.
Good.
The Wire is one of the greatest TV shows of all time. But Prison Break is just some shit that's a bit of fun.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was on the list of Mark, you utter twat.
You're good.
No, I want to do a running kick into your bollocks for not having seen The Wire, but I'll let you go.
In your bollocks.
Not having seen Prison Break.
In my bollocks.
In your bollocks. He's really good at playing characters who are on the very edge of their sanity, because he always looks like he could snap at any minute. He's another one of those that has a very determined, kind of angular face, and he just looks like his mask of sanity is about to slip. And I love that about him. And he's another one, like Shannon and like Rockwell, who if I see their name on a cast list, I want to go and see what they're in, which is fantastic, because there's a film coming out soon, which also co-stars Chris Hemsworth, called 12 Strong, and it's got William Fichtner and Michael Shannon in. So that's enough of a reason for me to see it. Just those dudes right there.
Bloody hell.
Let's have a skip trip for that then. Because it won't be one of our reviews. But yeah, are we up for that? We haven't had a skip trip for a while.
We've not.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's
up for that.
It's because Gemma never turns up.
No.
It's because I might fall to my death.
You've got to stop using that. It's gone. Well,
sometimes I doubt your commitment to Sparkle Motion.
Do you know what I've loved about this topic?
What's that?
We've discussed people that we've never hardly touched on before.
I know.
And it's been nice. I haven't even known half of the people you've been talking about, but then it clicked, and now I just want to go and watch everything you've discussed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, well, tell you what, let's round it up with one more.
Okay.
It's my last choice.
Have I just done that?
Yeah.
It's fine.
All that shit.
It's fine.
Give it in. It's fine.
Sorry, Gemma.
That's all right. So I'm going to round it up with one last person who I think is underrated, and that guy is Armie Hammer.
Yes, I like him a lot.
Who's he?
Again, Gemma will tell you what he's in and you'll know.
Right, okay, so do you remember back in April we did a little review called Free Fire by Ben Wheatley? Okay, do you remember that really handsome guy with the polo neck who we thought was gonna make... Armie Hammer, ladies and gentlemen. He is. He's very nice. So apart from the fact that he is dang fine, he's also a cracking actor. So he's done some really great performances in The Social Network as, can I add, two twins... Two guys.
The Winklevi.
Yeah, nice. That's right. And I believe that they were two separate entities. He was arguably the best thing in Lone Ranger, which is not a great film. But again, he has this sort of Hollywood kind of charisma about him. He sort of reminds me of the legends of yore, you know, like your Cary Grants and your Rock Hudsons, you know, the classic kind of actor. And I believe he is the future. He's the guy that's going to be carrying that torch moving forward. But he's also going to be coming up in a new film, which I believe is currently out now, called Call Me By My Name. And it's allegedly going to be an Oscar contender come awards season. And fingers crossed, he might get the recognition that he deserves. So I think I'm going to be seeing this in the next week or so. But I love the fact that not only does he come across as a really versatile actor, but he also comes across as a really likeable guy in real life. Mm-hmm. Check out any of his interviews going on. And the guy's lovely. He's really warm. He's really funny. He's really engaging. He might be asked the same questions over and over again, but he gives a really good answer, good thorough answers to the interviewer. I do think that Free Fire was probably his breakthrough performance.
Mm. He was great in Man from U.N.C.L.E. as well.
I completely forgot he was in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I never saw that.
Yeah.
Did you know? That was a really good film for a Guy Ritchie film as well.
Yeah.
It was really good.
It's like audience repellent, isn't it? Like with Guy Ritchie. No.
What, you mean better than King Arthur?
Just a bit.
Bloody hell. I don't actually, genuinely, I know no one that's ever seen that film.
King Arthur, no.
No.
There's a few.
I saw a headline of a review I saw for that film says that it's the new metal of films, and that just summed it up. I was like, God. I won't bother then.
The evanescence
of that. Oh, God. He's the Fred Durst of the film world.
I don't mind him. He's come good again, so, you know.
Yeah, but Armie Hammer, though.
Yes.
I read something about Armie Hammer years ago, and I don't know whether this is true or bullshit, but he's got a weird name, hasn't he? Armie Hammer.
Armie, yeah.
And I read that he is like the heir to the Arm and Hammer, you know, like they do toothpaste, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Like bicarbonate of soda toothpaste, and he's like the heir to that franchise, which is why his surname is Hammer, and his parents gave him the nickname Armie or something, because
it sounds like
Arm and Hammer. That could be bollocks. It sounds like it's bollocks.
No, but he has that air of grace about him as well.
And his teeth are always clean.
And he's perfect.
Think about it, a really nice, sparkly...
Oh, he's just a dreamboat.
Amazing. You are gushing a bit over him right now.
I am a little
My
bit.
Feet are wet.
Grab him up.
I've enjoyed this again.
Do you want to do your wrap-up
yes,
again?
Yes, I really enjoyed this. It's given us a great chance to discuss films we've never discussed before.
There we go. I've got some social media responses if you're interested.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yeah? Okay, so from Twitter, we got Charmaine Hannah @CharmaineHannah. Now, she said, Kim Cattrall, as she's only ever seen as Sam from Sex and the City.
And Police Academy.
And Big Trouble in Little China.
There we go, we've just reeled him off. Sienna Miller, so versatile and great in Factory Girl.
I don't know, I've never thought she was any good, to be honest.
I've not seen enough of her. I'd like to.
And Jake Johnson.
Yes, I love Jake Johnson.
And she said he's versatile, but he sometimes gets typecasted.
Yeah.
So let's hope that doesn't happen in the future. Rupert Denham Hall at Hall_business said Michael Shannon.
Yay.
Oscar Isaac.
Yes. Oh, hell yes.
Massively.
And Peter Sarsgaard.
Yeah, great actor.
Morphic Fields at Morphic Fields says Sean Pertwee.
Yeah, he's in Gotham at the minute, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, he is. That's a name I've not heard. Heather Graham.
No.
And Sophia Helen from Bron Broen, if that rings any bells?
Don't know.
Not familiar.
But there's your point, isn't it?
But there
should
we go.
Should be bigger and more exactly. recognised.
Mm. Christian Renteria at Chris Renteria 27 said Sam Rockwell,
yeah.
Walton Goggins.
Oh, hell yeah, Walton Goggins. Yes. I love Walton Goggins. He's unreal in Vice Principals.
As a dandy.
Yeah, he was the best thing in The Hateful Eight. He was amazing in a show called Justified. He was in The Shield. He was amazing in that as well. Love Walton Goggins.
Can we do part two of this?
Yeah.
And he also said James Badge Dale.
Oh, Badge rules.
Please tell me more, because I don't know
God.
Either.
Again, you might recognise him from being in, oh God, he was in Iron Man 3. He was like Killian's henchman, the one who could like turn into fire.
Right.
But he was also in a show back in the day on AMC called Rubicon, and it only lasted for one season. It was unreal, and he was so good in it. He was also in The Pacific, which was like the follow-up to Band
I
of Brothers.
Heard of that.
James Badge Dale absolutely rules, and it isn't in enough.
Cool. What choices from that guy?
Yeah, he also gave us some actresses.
Come on then.
Yeah? Okay, so he's gone for Hayley Lou Richardson.
Yes, she was in Split and very good in it.
Ah. Very, very good.
Mackenzie Davis.
Unreal.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, I agree with this one, Vera Farmiga.
Yeah.
Come join our podcast with stuff like that.
She's great, and I've been meaning to watch the Psycho...
Oh,
TV
Bates Motel.
Yeah.
Very good. I've done the first two seasons.
She's absolutely amazing in it. Gav Yule at Dodgy Monkey said Rooney Mara.
I'm not a huge fan.
Ben Foster, who I do like a lot.
Oh my God.
Amazing.
He's great.
Three Sense of Humour, he's so good in that.
And Guy Pearce.
Yes, yeah, he's
fair
a very
point.
Good actor
I could
as well.
Say, yeah. Yeah, I could say he's underrated. Johnny Edwards at Johnny C. Edwards said Killian Murphy, Jeff Daniels and Tim Roth.
All good.
Amazing. Mm. I don't know if I've put Daniels. Jeff Daniels is under...
Mm. It's just because you're thinking of Dumb and Dumber too.
And Mr. Hand at Philip Hand 2 said Michael B. Jordan.
Oh my God.
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah.
And Tim Roth again.
I love Tim Roth.
I know.
I've not watched Tin Star, that's his new show on Sky that's meant to be very good.
Yeah, I've heard good things about
it.
It's on the list. And on Facebook, we got Keith Manning, who said, William Fichtner. You're not alone, Ben. You're not alone. Michael Mando and Toby Kebbell.
Toby Kebbell's very good, yeah. Michael Mando is in the Breaking Bad spin-off. What's it called?
Better Call Saul.
Yeah. Is Nacho.
And Toby Kebbell in Dead Man's Shoes.
Oh, he's so good.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Holt said, John Heder.
Yes.
Well, he's done one film, hasn't he?
Oh, hang on. He's done the Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory. Yeah. Yeah, great film. I love that
film.
Ellen Page.
Yes.
I can
amazing actress.
So good.
How about this? Amy Adams.
She's not underrated.
She's got
been
Oscars.
Nominated for five
yeah.
Oscars. But you're right. She is amazing.
Yeah. And then finally, we've got David Roper, who said, John Cusack. Where is John Cusack?
Oh, he's gone down the Bruce Willis and Nicolas Cage route of doing paycheck movies. Absolute shit, straight to DVD crap now.
And going on Twitter and having really bad political outbursts every five minutes.
No.
Yeah, like, calm down, dude. Just hold a stereo above your head and make me smile.
He also said, Jason Bateman.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
He plays the same character in everything, but he is great.
He's allowed, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he finally said, Winona Ryder.
Hell yeah.
But luckily, we're now seeing her again.
Oh, Joycey baby.
Yeah.
More Winona in everything, please.
Brilliant.
Agreed.
Whose topic is it next?
It's mine. And what I want us to do is focus on who I believe are the unsung heroes of film. People who you might not know their names. So it might take a little bit of digging to come up with your answers. I want to talk about the cinematographers.
Oh my God, yes!
Who are also known as directors of photography. You might see them called by one or the other of the names. The director decides what needs to be shot, but it's up to the cinematographer to make it look good, to make those plans, to make those sketches come to life. It's their job to deliver on the promises that the director makes. So for you guys here in the room with me, and for you guys out there in Listenerland, if you can't think of your favourite cinematographer's names off the top of your head, it will take a bit of research, but think of it like this. Think about the films that visually blow your mind, that visually just take your breath away. Then go on to IMDb and look at the crew list, and you'll find the cinematographer or the director of photography. Do that for a few of your favourite films, and you'll start to see the same names coming up over and over again. So it'll take a little bit of research, but it's worth it. So next time round, top three cinematographers.
The only true currency in this bankrupt world is what you share with someone else when you're uncool.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Murder on the Orient Express, which is Kenneth Branagh's retelling of Agatha Christie's classic mystery featuring legendary detective Hercule Poirot. After a con man is killed aboard the luxurious Orient Express, Poirot finds himself investigating a case where seemingly every passenger has a motive for murder. The film features a large ensemble cast including Daisy Ridley, Johnny Depp, Judi Dench, Willem Dafoe, Michelle Pfeiffer and Branagh himself as Poirot. As per usual, there will be spoilers because we're going to be discussing major plot points and the big twist ending. So, I'm going to throw this to Gemma first because Mark wasn't at all interested in seeing this film. So I'm not at all interested in hearing his opinion.
And it would be nice to hear her opinion about a film as it's been a
That's
couple
true,
of episodes.
She's had a week off sunning herself abroad.
Yeah.
So, Gemma, what are your thoughts on Murder on the Orient Express?
The beginning is great. Really captivates you and gets you invested into the story. The conclusion and unravelling is great. It really captivates you and tells you the story. But everything else is so boring. This isn't Murder on the Orient Express. This is Murder on the Snorient Express.
Brilliant.
I'm thoroughly disappointed. I left the cinema with my hands clenched. I was so furious because I was incredibly excited about the whole film and I've been let down.
Mark.
Told you so.
No.
I can't. I went in there with such low expectations in an ignorant way. There was no reason why I should have. I just watched the trailer and thought, I can't be arsed with that. Then Ben was like, we're reviewing it. I was like, I must be arsed with that. And it wasn't that bad. It was all right, to be fair, because I went in with such low expectations. I would have been probably pleasantly surprised if it had just been okay. It wasn't that bad. It didn't feel as long as 2 hours something that it was. I like bits about it. But overall, it was shite.
John, it wasn't that bad. It's I quite really liked great. It. It was shite.
Look, it was poo. It wasn't.
You're softening the turd.
No, overall, it wasn't great.
Murder on the Orient Express. Turder on the Orient Express. Yeah, I echo what both of you have said. There were bits I enjoyed. I specifically enjoyed Branagh as Poirot, but the film itself. It's hard to put your finger on it, but it just didn't quite work. It was dull for large stretches, and it just didn't have what I expected it to have. So, yeah, did not love it, quite frankly. Let's talk about the...
Moustache.
Let's talk about the two-star moustache.
Let's get that out of the moustache. Way.
Oh, yeah. If I could grow one, I'd grow it like that.
Is it real? Do you
I
think
don't
he's because
it
know. Nothing in the world can look that pristine for so long on set under those conditions with the light with the makeup? It didn't move for 2 hours. Like, yeah. I was watching that more than what was going on in the background. I wasn't even trying to work out who'd done it. I was like, how's he done that?
Can I see the moustache? Follicles? Yeah. Can we test it with you? Because you got a bit of a beard going on right now.
I don't think it would be strawberry blonde, but yeah, it's auburn. But yeah. Mousy. But no, that was the highlight for me of the film, his moustache. And
brilliant.
I loved it when he went to bed. He had like a container thing to put it in, so it kept it in
like
shape.
Like a hairnet.
Yeah, so
I want one
kink.
Of them. If I do
kink.
Ever grow one, I want one of them.
Brilliant.
That's my contribution, Ben.
So shall we score it? It didn't feel like a movie to me. It felt like a Sunday night ITV show. Which is fine, it's not the worst thing in the world, but if you're going to pay cash money to go to the cinema, you want it to feel cinematic and bolder and bigger and worth your time. This just felt like some shit on ITV.
He's nailed it, hasn't he? It's the ITV, 9 o'clock, and my mum would be like, me and your dad are watching it, don't ring.
Yeah.
It's our favourite thing of the week, we're watching it, and they'd have loved it. Absolutely bloody... It's Downton Abbey on a train.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
That's a good way of putting
shite.
It.
Shite. Worst film ever, no, it was all right.
Even during the interrogation scenes, I would expect something to be a little bit more interesting to captivate you, but it was just that the camera was just panning on them talking to each other, so there was no flashback, and I would have expected something a little bit of interest to it.
Yeah.
And I hate to admit it, but at times I could feel my head sort of go because I just found it so boring. And this isn't a credit against Branagh, you know, like he's done some great films. Like, Christ's sake, he directed the first Thor film, you know, and that's a classic. But it just, it was all fart and no shit.
It was all
shit coming out.
No shit.
A lot.
It was so tonally inconsistent as well. So the first half of the film, there's a lot of jokes, there's a lot of kind of humour or attempts at humour. Poirot himself is an innately humorous character in this. But then the denouement, the ending of the film, is really dark. And I didn't, it didn't have any impact for me. The ending, the twist ending, is supposed to be a kick in the chest. I'd never read the book, nor had I seen one of the previous films of this. So the ending was new to me, and it's supposed to be a kick in the chest. And I was just like, oh, okay. Because I didn't feel the weight of it, because they'd been too funny and too many jokes in the build-up to it. It should have been purely dramatic, I think. It just would have delivered the ending more strongly.
There was no connection with the other characters.
Oh, because there's too many characters and none of them register.
And I'll be honest, when the reveal was occurring, I was trying to remember some of the other guys going, what was your connection again? Like, I couldn't care for them. And that's a horrible thing to say. The only real character I cared about was probably Michelle Pfeiffer's character as Mrs. Hubbard. The one great shining light about this film. Thank you for coming back to our screens, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, so good.
She's wonderful. And I think people actually forget just how good of an actress she was. I mean, she was obviously very present in the 80s and the early 90s. She's in one of my favourite films, Grease 2. I mean, come on, let's face it. That in itself is a good thing. But it's so nice to see her back on the screen. And of course, next year, we're going to be seeing a lot more of her with being in a Marvel film for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
So good.
Wow. And Josh Gad wasn't unbearable to watch.
He was okay.
He was all right, to be fair.
He's all right.
I think what you both were saying there, and I totally agree, is that I didn't care. So when it got an hour in, I stopped caring about what was going on, who had actually killed Johnny Depp's character. I didn't care. I'd lost interest. There was too much discussion. And because there was so many characters, I didn't have any time to even want them to not be the killer or want them to be the killer. So the problem is you've got Judi Dench in there, who is one of our most famous actresses from our country, right? Ever. Do you agree?
Yeah, of course.
She looked like she couldn't be arsed. She was in it for sort of 10, 15 minutes. Then she had a mate with her that's from...
Olivia,
what's her name?
Yeah. Olivia Colman?
Olivia Colman.
I have to associate her as
Peep Show?
Peep Show, the girl off Peep Show, who didn't talk for about an hour. And I thought the whole thing was going to be that she didn't talk for the whole film. But I didn't give a shit.
No.
I didn't give a shit about any of the characters. As you know, Daisy Ridley is a great actress, but in this I was just like, oh, I like your face and I miss you in Star Wars. I wasn't even thinking about you adding anything to this. Rubbish.
The Olivia Colman thing pissed me off especially. She had, I think, three lines, two of which were in German. Cheers. Why bring in Olivia Colman, one of the best working actresses right now, and give her nothing to do? Too many characters and none of them were properly serviced.
Yeah.
Talking about characters that aren't serviced, Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It sounds crazy, but it was reminding me he can act.
Oh, yeah.
Because I associate his last few performances as being with Kevin Smith. And I know we joke, but he was in Tusk, which we found very offensive and rubbish and over the top and silly and just being an idiot.
Absolute
just
shit.
Why are you doing that to your IMDb page? You know, you're ruining yourself. He came back for Yoga Hosers. I didn't really buy into his return in that gangster film. Remember, I was like, oh, he's back. It's his
Black
best.
Mass. It was okay.
It was all right. It wasn't great. And it was so good to actually see him back on screen looking like he cares, looking like, you know, he hasn't got Danny Elfman there going, I'm going to do a soundtrack to whatever you do. And the director, that Tim Burton, wasn't involved. So it was nice to see him. But he got killed off after 15 minutes. We didn't really get to see any more of him.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I didn't rate him in this.
Really?
I thought he was sleepwalking. I did. Hence why when you mentioned him, I just sort of let out a collective like... like he really doesn't give a shit. And if the reports are to be believed, at the premiere he was having to be held up by a security guard because he was pissed out of his tree.
My mate Ben was there and he said he was being an absolute twat and falling over people and just being an utter disgrace.
Shame.
Perhaps he'd watch the film back. Drown his sorrows.
The character that pissed me off the most was Dr. Arbuthnot, played by Lamar Odom Jr. He apparently was meant to be English, which I wasn't aware of until someone halfway through the film referred to him as the Brit, because his English accent was the worst piece of shit I've ever heard. It was an atrocity, and he should never, ever try that again. Because he's an American actor. I think he's known for being in that Hamilton stage musical,
yes,
isn't
he? Yes, he is.
That's what he's known for. But he was dog shit in there. He was fine. As an actor, he was fine, but his accent was offensive.
So we're ripping this. Like, it's not too bad. It was all right. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. The accent was atrocious. He should be. It's like me doing my South African accent. There's a reason why I don't do it anymore. I've done it. It didn't work. I've got to forget about it. Move on. You've got to move on now too.
I don't know.
It's going to come back one day.
Oh, shall I put the final nail in the coffin?
Yeah.
So we all know that Agatha Christie wrote the book. So there needs to be a screenplay guy to write the film. And that screenplay guy was Michael Green, who wrote Logan and Blade Runner 2049.
And he wrote this shite as well.
Oh, yeah.
That is disappointing.
He's basically going, look, I've got Blade Runner to do. Work experience guy. You have the job. Stick my name on it. I'll still get the money, but you take the credit.
There's no other explanation, is there?
We look very down in the dumps.
I kind of just want to score it and move on to better things.
Yeah.
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 Six.
he shouted.
Yeah, just six. I don't need to do the old, oh, they didn't do it. It's six.
I echo it, six.
Yeah, it's a six from me.
So Murder on the Orient Express gets a skip to the end, 6 out of 10.
It's time for some competitions, so let's kick things off with... What's that look for?
That's not how it goes.
Oh, okay, let's try one more time.
Please.
It's competition time!
Yay!
Much better. So, as you just heard, it's time to announce the winners from the last episode, where we had some really good competitions, but also, you know, reward our listeners for some more competitions coming up. So let's talk about the last episode, the one that Gemma missed.
Because I would have died.
We put a chance to be the new podcaster for Skip to the End to replace Gemma. All you had to do was turn up. Anyway, what we did is we had a really good rewatch that actually scared me because we did What We Do in the Shadows. And did you see what came of that this week?
I did.
We are very powerful at Skip to the End, too powerful for our own good sometimes. Gemma,
yes.
What was the announcement that officially came out from the man himself this week?
Well, Taika Waititi has announced that there is going to be a sequel involving the werewolf crew called Werewolves.
That's it. And Ben was talking those exact words on the episode. Mm-hmm. So, Ben, I hope you're going to get some bunts for that.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I think the fact that this has been announced, it's 95% due to Skip to the End podcast doing the rewatch and 5% due to the fact that Taika Waititi has just directed one of the most successful films of the year. That's only the smaller fraction, obviously.
96.4, yeah, I reckon. Right, yeah, something like that.
Push it.
But to celebrate, we had a t-shirt from Last Exit to Nowhere, which we all got ourselves, which is really nice, the grey t-shirt. And what we did to win one of these is ask you a really simple question. What rating on the rewatch did we give the film What We Do in the Shadows? So, Gemma.
Yes.
What did we give it?
We gave it an official Skip to the End 8 out of 10.
So James Lucy is going to get that in the post and you can look like us. That's a competition prize in itself. Look like Skip to the End. The second competition we had was for the brand new Ninjago movie, which we wanted to make quite interactive. So we asked people to show us their Lego collections or put together something. I didn't see enough people do like Skip to the End towers or build us in the studio or build us. I saw people just showing off their collections.
No, because you specifically asked them not to.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Fucking hell.
Ignore everything I say. So what we had up for grabs from our good friends at Warner Brothers was the activity set, an eye mask, character mask, caps, sheets, books, t-shirts, caps, hoodies, phone cases, stationery sets, you name it. If it's got Ninjago on it, we're giving it away.
Except Lego.
Yes.
There's no Lego in there.
We're going to come back with some Lego one day. So Scott Sutherland, who showed us his picture, look at this collection, guys. It's got the Ghostbusters Tower. It's got Back to the Future. I know, it's insane.
It's Lego.
That's how much he's got. And I think anyone that's that much of a fanatic should be deserving of this incredible prize.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
If you want to see that particular picture or any of the other pictures of Lego that our listeners have put up there, please go to our Twitter at STTE Podcast or search for Skip to the End Podcast on Instagram or facebook.com/Skip to the End Podcast.
Nicely done. Our good friends Funko, that's a
Funko,
who have been so good. Since we've been working with these guys, we're getting loads of cool stuff. And we had a full set of the Thor Ragnarok. I can't do it quite.
Ragnarok.
There we go. And what it was is basically who directed the film Thor Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
I can't do it as well.
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
And who was it? Because I'm not going to try and announce that name. Ben?
Taika Waititi.
Fantastic. So Michael Lewis, who came through on Facebook, so you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you can bloody go anywhere to win these prizes, will be getting the full set. There's like six of them. Unbelievable. And if we see him on eBay, we'll hunt you down and we'll murder you in your sleep. I do say that every time, but we stick to what we say.
We're people of our word.
Brilliant. And finally, Richard Sounds gave us a UBL Flip 4, which is basically a really good Bluetooth speaker that's waterproof. So as some of our listeners listen to us in the shower and bath, you can take us in the shower and bath with you.
Yeah. Alan's Deep Bath.
Sponsored by Dettol.
What we did is we just want to flatter our egos. So we just said, what is the best thing about Skip the End? That simple. You haven't even got to go on iTunes. You haven't got to do much. You just tell us why you love us. And someone put out there, HollyKate77 has said, honestly, I've listened to hundreds and hundreds of podcasts. You have the best chemistry I've ever heard in 10 years of listening. Aww. That is nice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And at school, everyone said I was shit at chemistry. So, doing pretty well. And maths, and English, and science, and French.
Definitely and English. Anything, definitely yeah. English.
I was good at snogging around the old, bike
sheds. That's French, isn't it?
Yeah, that was good. I was bloody good at that. So, let's give away some new stuff. Coming up very shortly, we've got the Almost Famous rewatch. And Last Exit to Nowhere have done an official Stillwater Tour t-shirt, which is really, really cool. We're going to give one of those away. Listen to the rewatch shortly and tell us who directed Almost Famous. Really, really simple. Also, coming up, it's not too far away now, Christmas. We've got, the knitted die-hard Christmas jumpers from Dark Bunny?
Oh,
they've done it with the actual knitted wool. Not just nice. The look now. They've actually gone out there and done it. There's not some poor fucker there knitting for them. But it looks unbelievable. So let's say, what's the character that Bruce Willis plays in that? How's that sound? Nice and simple?
Yep. Very.
And I'm loving the iTunes rating. We've had loads come this week. Loads. So if you go and give us a iTunes rating of 5 stars.
5 stars.
Some dickhead this week put 4 stars. Not what? Happy about that. Yeah. And they had said, do you know why I don't give you 4 stars? Because like telling my wife, her food is always a 9 out of 10. There's always room for improvement. You're not going to win doing stuff like that.
She needs to leave him.
Have we blocked that person?
No, but if you don't change it to a 5, I'm telling you now, you'll never win anything ever again.
And Mark will hunt you down and murder in your sleep, because that appears to be his MO.
Yeah, it's a trademark.
I know.
Trademark.
Oh, God, Gemma.
That's awful.
Get out.
What we'll do is we're going to reward you a Funko of Thor and Hulk. How fair's that for leaving us an iTunes rating? I don't want to tease too much, but if you are a fan of Funkos in general, and I've seen how basically people get very obsessive with these things, stick around for the next episode because we've got something that money can't buy, and that's all I'm going to say at this point. So stick around and I'll announce the winners and reveal this prize in 2 weeks' time.
You know what I do? I connect. I get people off. I look for the one guy who isn't getting off, and I make him get off.
Now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot of said actress or actor and we wax lyrical about our favourite performance from that person. So on the last episode, oh boy, we picked a humdinger. We picked out Leonardo DiCaprio. Now where the bloody hell do we start with this one? Where?
He's the greatest actor of all time, in my humble opinion.
Fact.
He's up there for me, top three.
So
it's for me at the moment, it's been the toughest one yet. And I even said to Ben yesterday on the way in from the cinema, I had to go home and watch, before I went to bed, one of the final films that I got it down to. It was between two.
Yeah.
I watched it and that was the icing on the cake. But this has been the most stressful masturbate I've had of my life.
Well, let's put those stresses to bed, shall we? Ben, I want to hear your favourite Leonardo DiCaprio performance right now.
It was so tough because, as I've said, he's my favourite of all time. I could have picked one from a dozen, but I've gone with Calvin Candy in Django Unchained.
Incredible.
I absolutely love him in this film because it was his first purely villainous role. A lot of actors, especially when they get to the A-list, don't like to play villains because they think it will somehow affect their ability to pull in the dollars at the box office. It's why Will Smith, for example, has never played a villain. But who gives a shit? He's shite anyway. But this was the first time that DiCaprio did it, and I think it's because it was Tarantino. I think if some random director would have come up to him and said, do you want to play a villain? Nah, I'm all right. But because it's Tarantino, he went, yeah, I'll do anything you want me to do. And he is so good as Calvin Candy, this evil slave driver. He's a piece of shit, but it's a ferociously intense role. But the thing is, he can then switch it up. You know, one minute he's ferociously intense, the next minute he's all engaging and affable and welcoming, but there's always that sinister undercurrent with him. And one of my favourite stories in film history is that horrible, vicious scene around the dinner table where you've got Django and Dr. Kinschultz there with him. And he's getting angrier and angrier, and he smashes his hand on the table. And when he pulls his hand back up, you see that his hand's bleeding. And that wasn't prosthetics, that wasn't fake blood. That really happened. He smashed his hand on the table, and there was a piece of loose glass there, and it cut him. And he didn't even wince. He didn't even react. He didn't try and get the shot stopped. He just carried on delivering his lines. You see him looking at the blood dripping off his hands, and it's so visceral and so real. And apparently at the end of that shot, once Tarantino finally called cut, everyone just gave him a standing ovation and a round of applause, because they were like, that's fucking method right there. His hand is pissing blood, and he didn't stop because he's the goddamn best. And it takes a lot to steal a film when you've got Christoph Waltz in it. He was playing Dr. Kinschultz, and he is absolutely fantastic in that film. Samuel L. Jackson, we discussed this. I think when we did MMD for Samuel L. Jackson, we all agreed that his role in that film was his best ever performance.
We did.
So to steal it from him as well, to just knock everyone else out of the room and make it all about him, it's just the most magnetic and brilliant that DiCaprio has ever been.
A piece of perfect casting.
I now know that when I finish recording today, I'm going to go home and watch that scene again to now know that it was not meant to happen. Because I've never even noticed that it shouldn't be like that. Yeah. That's credit to him.
Yeah, definitely. Go on, Mark. What's yours?
Dom Cobb in Inception.
Great choice.
Absolute fascinating performance for me. The fact that he carries the emotional weight for probably nearly 3 hours under the direction of Christopher Nolan, who you know is a perfectionist. When he announced he'd be working with Leonardo DiCaprio, I thought, this is a match made in heaven. You've got one of the finest directors in the world. He hadn't done Interstellar at this point. And you've got Leonardo DiCaprio, who's done everything he could. Not got an Oscar, but done everything to the best he ever could. Whenever you go and see a film, you never say he was a bit weak in that. He's always the best thing about everything you see. So they came together. I was worried because I thought, God, is this going to be too much hype? Am I going to live up to it? It blew me away. His performance in this film, from the start to the finish, the way that he has that shot of redemption again, the way he basically is a flawed, fragile man, I cared for his character the whole way through. I've never seen such a serious film from him where he's given... I know people talk about The Revenant and stuff like this, where he's gone meth and he's done this and he's got the Oscar and he's been on set and nearly died and all this. For me, I've never seen him give such raw, hard work and effort and everything he could to this role, and it doesn't even look like he's trying.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's a natural.
Effortless.
I just sat there for 3 hours and didn't even look at the other people on set. And even though you had people like Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy, all I cared about was Leonardo DiCaprio's character the whole way through. An absolute masterpiece. And the reason? His performance.
Yeah, he's amazing. One of the things that always makes me chuckle about that film, have you ever seen any of the on-set photos of him with Nolan?
No.
Because Leonardo DiCaprio is just Nolan's mini-me. They both wear exactly the same clothes. So the clothes that Cobb wears in the film, that's what Nolan wears when he's directing. Yeah. And their hair is styled in exactly the same way. And you look at DiCaprio and you think, yeah, in 20 years you will look like Nolan. And I don't know if that was an intentional thing on Nolan's part, that he wanted to cast his mini-me, or if it was just a weird coincidence.
That's weird.
Just staring at each other like, yeah, you will be me, son. That would be mad if it turned out he was his dad.
That's an Inception 12, in its own right. Yeah,
that's amazing. An M. Night Shyamalan twist right there.
Come on then, Jem.
Okay, so I've gone right back to the beginning of his career, and it was the first DiCaprio film I'd ever seen him in, and it is still my favourite. So my choice is Arnie Grape in What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Excellent choice.
Incredible.
He is so hypnotic, his whole performance as this teenager with a mental disability who kind of lives by his own rules, really, underneath the house with his brother and his mother and his other sisters. You know, he hides in trees, he climbs on top of water towers, he hides all around the house, he refuses to take baths. But there's something so endearing and so tragic about the way he plays Arnie. You know, he has this sort of mischievous sort of tragedy about what he does because he doesn't understand the world how the rest of his siblings and his family do. You know, this role could have been played by anybody else and it would have been too over the top. I think we've discussed this in previous episodes where, you know, it's all about making sure that the casting is right. And I genuinely do not believe, or I cannot imagine, any other actor, especially a young actor, playing this performance. DiCaprio is so warm and so loving, and it's not mocking anybody with this kind of disability that they have. It's just a really lovely way of portraying such a childlike and such an innocent character who just wants to have fun on his own. And this is the charm about what DiCaprio is all about. And it's great to see that he's carried it on throughout the rest of his career. You watch any of his earliest stuff like This Boy's Life, The Basketball Diaries 2. This guy was always meant to be a star. He was always sort of an underground kind of film actor in the 90s. But now, we've said it, he is the best actor today.
I love him. And this was his big breakthrough role. I believe it was his first Oscar nomination as well, yeah.
I don't know what to say. We've just literally said everything we could. The only other actor that comes close to me from that young age that has now shone and basically you still have so much respect for is Christian Bale. Because at that age,
absolutely,
you saw him in Empire of the Sun, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's the only one that has carried on. So many other actors have failed and gone off and done mad stuff and formed bands that shouldn't be formed and stuff like that. But these actors today have still got what they had back then, and it's amazing. And I think there is no finer actor out there.
You know, I agree.
It's not even if it's your favourite, you can never say he's shit in a film.
I didn't appreciate that dig at Corey, though, Mark. But I do agree with what you're saying. His man isn't shit. So.
Well, they're not together anymore.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a shame. So, I want to hear what the social media said.
Yeah.
So do I. Mike Donahue on Twitter, at madman1891, has said his brilliant performance in The Departed.
Oh.
Definitely the one I most was left thinking, how the fuck can Leo not get an Oscar for this? And it's a great question. It was my number two.
I was about to say, surely that was tapping at the door.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love him in this. I think he's like a young De Niro in The Departed. And yeah, how did he not get an Oscar for it? He wasn't even nominated, because that film came out the same year as Blood Diamond, and he was nominated for Blood Diamond instead, which I didn't love that film particularly. So yeah, I think he was robbed there. Mike at MikeRB2223 on Twitter has said, has to be Calvin Candy in Django Unchained. Performance-wise, I just loved him in this movie. I felt like I didn't see Leo in this performance, which sold it for me. Yeah, he became that evil piece of shit, didn't he?
I love it when characters just morph into something completely unrecognisable.
Mm-hmm. Ben Potter on Facebook has said Wolf of Wall Street for the Quaalude scene alone.
Yes!
Hilarious.
I need to watch that again soon. Oh, I've only ever seen it once.
Oh, so
it's
good.
It's long. Yeah. I don't love that film. I love him in it, but the film is too long.
I love it.
On Twitter, Ben Idiot is at Ben_NerdChat has said, "Catch me if you can." Superb performance. His portrayal of the real-life con man Frank Abagnale is layered, and you genuinely sympathise with his plight.
That was kind of the period where he kind of said, I'm not doing any more sort of romantic crap. I'm going to say I'm actually doing what I want. I don't want to do Time to Alec and be associated as him. Let me do what I want.
Exactly right. And this was the film that turned me around on him. I used to hate him because he was just the pretty boy that was in Basketball Diaries and Titanic. I couldn't stand the guy. And then when I saw him in this, I was like, wow, I was wrong.
It's a fun film too.
And he's never going to go back to that now. He knows what makes him so strong.
Fee-fi-fo-film at Fiona Underhill has agreed with Gemma and said, what's eating Gilbert Grape?
Yeah,
also on Twitter, Charmaine Hannah at Charmaine Hannah. This is probably the hardest question you lot have asked so far, but I think I'm going to have to go for Gangs of New York. Great choice.
I haven't watched that for ages.
It's so much better than people give it credit for.
The fact it's him and Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yep.
And Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, I was going to say heavyweights.
No, she's great in that.
She is good.
Very good, yeah. On Facebook, Graham Doyle said The Aviator. He's had some brilliant roles, but I think that's his best.
Oh, that's a long film.
Another long film. Great film. Have you not?
No.
It's really good.
Just, it's too long.
He's amazing in it. Cate Blanchett's amazing in it. Mm. Really good movie. Tam Honks at Maniac Cop 3 has said This Boy's Life. Now, Gemma mentioned this just now. I've not seen this one.
It's fantastic. It stars Robert De Niro and Ellen Burstyn, I think.
Really?
It's fantastic. It's just about this sort of... this young kid, and he's got a new stepdad who's married his mum, and just he's so abusive towards him. It is very uncomfortable viewing, but DiCaprio just sort of, he solved it.
I need to check that one out. Mark, we've got someone here agreeing with you. Englishman San Diego at Englishman SDCC has said Cobb, Inception.
Good.
And finally, we have Paul Schofield on Facebook, who has said The Basketball Diaries.
It's not a great film, but he is the best thing about it. He plays like a junkie.
Some very uncomfortable scenes on that. It's tough to watch what he had to go through for that role. But fair play to him at a young age again.
Mm.
Indeed it is. Oh, I've had so much fun talking about the best, the greatest. Aww. But it's time to pick again. So it's Mark's turn to pick a name at random out of the pot.
Are you guys ready? I want a drum roll.
There we go.
Let's give it.
On the next episode, we will be masturbating over... oh my lord, Kevin Spacey.
No.
Nah. Do you know what? Fuck that guy.
Yes.
Put him in the bin.
Fuck him.
Pick again.
Are you ready?
Let's do a drum roll again.
Second time lucky. Oh my lord. Luckily, this one is a lot more safe, but it's up there. We are going to be masturbating over Brad Pitt.
Hey!
Oh my my god!
Would you please welcome from Dry Michigan,
It's now time for the rewatch. Now, if you are new to Skip to the End, welcome. But this is basically a chance for us to take it in turn to pick an old classic for us to discuss. We don't just cover new releases, we love to cover the old days too. So this time around, it's my turn and I've picked the Cameron Crowe classic. Yes, I will say classic because if you're an old-term listener to us, it was one of my favourite films of all time. The film tells the story of William Miller, a 15-year-old kid who is hired by the Rolling Stone magazine. He's sent on tour to write about the upcoming band Stillwater. The film then follows William as he falls face first to confront life, love, and lingo, but this is all against the objection of his very protective mother. This film, for me, personally, is a very personal film.
Do you like that? Do you like that?
It's been mentioned on endless episodes for soundtracks, for acting performances, for underperforming actors, for everything I could ever shoehorn it into, it's been used. So let's not hear me talk for now. Ben, at this moment, I'm so on the edge of my seat, more than probably Jaws, I will be completely honest, because you haven't seen this film.
No, I hadn't,
yesterday.
Until yesterday, yeah.
Gemma, let's take a seat, let's chill, let's have a sip of our brothers.
Ben,
Almost Famous, give it to me.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I think the reason why I didn't love it, why I didn't like it more, is because I quite honestly, I don't get Cameron Crowe's whole thing. He's too earnest for me. Everything he does, it's very heart on your sleeve, sincere. And I like shit with a darker heart. I like stuff with an air of cynicism about it. So it's just too pure for me, I think. But that's not his fault. That's not a problem. That's just my interpretation of things. But I did enjoy it. It felt a little low stakes, but it didn't matter because the cast is so great and the chemistry between the cast is so off the charts good that I found myself enjoying it anyway.
I'll settle for that. I'm happy with that. Gemma.
Yes. This took me back.
Yes.
Yes.
I picked it.
Right. What can I do for
you
today?
I tell
you.
This gave me such a warm glow of nostalgia and it took me back to being 15, 16 years old or 18 years old and completely falling in love with music. This is a beautiful, dreamy, lovely coming-of-age story and thankfully for you, Mark, I loved it.
I'm very happy. Now, the first thing I want to touch upon, you know I love this film. It's my top five. I absolutely love everything about it. For me, it's a flawless film. The acting, everything about it, the soundtrack,
yes.
Jason Lee's performance, every single performance there. But Ben just started talking about the actors and the performances themselves that made it for you. Let's just go straight in there with Frances McDormand. Said
yeah.
correctly?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Ben? My God, this girl can act in anything she's ever been in.
She's a good old girl.
This woman can act in everything she's ever been asked
yes.
to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for me, as you've never seen it before, Ben, I thought she was fantastic as the mother.
She was my favourite thing in the film.
Brilliant.
By a distance. I thought she was hilarious and warm and loving. And I love the way that she interacts with Russell. So she has that phone call with him and it just shocks him to shit when she says that, you know, it's not too late for you. And then when he turns up at their house and she was like, I knew we had a connection. I love the way she is with him because she could have been a stereotypical shrew of a mother and just been an arsehole to him. But she seemed genuinely warm and caring to him. And the fact that she let her son go on the road at 15 with this rock and roll band who she knew were doing drugs and, you know, sleeping with groupies and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. She was scared. She didn't want him to go, but she led him because she loved him and wanted him to follow his dreams. Brilliant character, amazingly well played.
It's like she learned from the mistake with Anita, played by Zoe Deschanel. She obviously had her under the cosh, and so with William, it was another chance. It was a get-out-of-jail-free card. Maybe with William, she could get it right. But Frances McDormand is astounding. And we're going to be seeing her in Three Billboards coming very, very soon,
yeah.
and it's going to be another accolade to her career.
It's that character of the overbearing mom that you just get so sick to death of. But it's that scene when she's in the car and she's like, it's time to tell him how old he is. And it's like, what do you mean how old I am? I'm 13. No, you know, and it's just sitting there going, I kept you back from homeschool. I believed it was the best. And she's got the good intentions, but it's that fact when she actually just turns around and goes 11 and you see his heartbreak. The reason he hasn't got pubes in the shower with the kids at school, he hasn't got a mustache in front of the mirror with the rest of them. And you're just that heartbreaking moment of, he's been robbed of 2 years of his life, but she doesn't even feel any kind of empathy or any kind of upset. She's just like, it's for the right reason. I know, I'm a teacher, I'm a mom, I'm looking out for the best. She's incredible, absolutely awesome. I don't want to go through every single actor one at one, but I need to just give credit to the fact that Cameron Crowe auditioned for the role of Penny Lane to about 50 actresses. You name it, they went for this. The fact that he picked Kate Hudson, who wasn't a huge actress at the time, you know, it's our sister.
If you actually think about it, that's true. Kurt Russell's daughter.
It's our sister.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone else in the world, actually, when I watch it back, could have done that role. I think she's just gorgeous. She's so innocent at times, but so guilty with the wrong people and so naive.
She's absolutely brilliant in the film. And my overwhelming emotion when watching in this film was one of sadness for the fact that she's never really lived up to it. She was nominated for an Oscar for this, and she's flawless in the film. And then I think, but then you did 10 rom-coms with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Why didn't you stick with this? Why didn't you get a better agent who can put you in roles like this? Because she's clearly a great actress. Having never seen this film, I always assumed she was a bit of a joke. I didn't realise she had any talent whatsoever. How wrong I was. And it's just a shame that she hasn't done more.
She's so cool in this.
That's
all,
it. She's
it's
cool.
It's all happening.
Yeah.
It's all happening. She is. She's an enigma to William, but of course, as the onion layers unravel, you realise she's just a 16-year-old girl who's lost her way, and the only way she really feels connected is with music. And without the booze and the drugs and the casual sex when I was her age, I can totally relate to how music became family. And I found that so appealing about her. She found solace in chords and lyrics and feelings. And she's such an iconic character for women, teenagers, just to kind of connect with. But, you know, without the drugs and the sex and the booze. But no one wants to get their stomach pumped at 16.
Oh, that's tough.
That's a horrible scene.
Yeah, not again.
My God.
No. I want to go home.
Never again.
I want to go home. We are home. That line.
That whole scene.
Amazing.
That whole scene is probably my favourite.
Her chemistry with Patrick Fugit is off the charts. They're great together, aren't they?
And again, he wasn't a big actor. He's not now, to be fair to him. Yeah. He's done some TV stuff since. But those two together are just flawless. And the fact that then we get to meet the band themselves, Stillwater, who I think they're the greatest thing on screen. I know you loved the characters apart from this, but I think they were brilliant. Jason Lee, and this is why I wanted to bring it to the podcast. Again, what is he doing now? Where is this guy? Because
I have no idea. Is he hanging out with John Cusack?
He looked like a lead singer of a band. It wasn't like, oh, this is a bit cheesy and he's trying too hard. I know that Cameron Crowe put them with bands and made them go on tour and rehearsed 5-9 hours a day, all this sort of stuff. But he looked like a singer of a band. He had the cool charisma, the confidence, everything about him, the swag.
Yeah.
I believed he was a singer of a band.
Me too. And just from a technical standpoint, I forget the name of the actual vocalist who did his vocals for him. But often you'll get these kind of films where they're getting actors to play musicians and then they'll get vocalists to put the vocals over the top and they don't match their face. It doesn't look like that noise could come out of that face. Whoever did the vocals, it looks genuinely like it could have been him singing. Yeah. It wasn't, but it felt like it could. It was beautifully done.
Yeah, you know that.
Fever Dog! That is
an excellent song. And Stillwater is the greatest fictional band ever.
After Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second greatest fictional band ever.
The fact that they wrote all those songs and got all those people to record, and, you know, they are really decent songs.
But not only that, it genuinely feels like a genuine band from the 70s. And then when you mark it up against the rest of the soundtrack, oh my God, this is one of the best soundtracks I've heard in a very long time.
The actual songs from Stillwater themselves, Mike McCready from Pearl Jam stepped in to do all the guitar work. Just pull all the in.
And don't they have like Peter Frampton doing all of it, you know, helping them out to learn how to play and stuff like that.
Legend.
I suppose my one qualm with the music is I didn't quite believe that they would have been on tour with Sabbath.
No.
I don't think a band that kind of noodly would have been on tour with Sabbath, but you know, it's a minor complaint.
So what did you think of the guitarist himself, Billy Crudup?
Amazing. Billy Crudup could have been in our topic earlier today because he is one of the most underrated actors on earth. And he had such a high wire act with this character because in lesser hands, Russell Hammond could have been a complete dick.
Yeah.
He could have been someone that you had no sympathy for. You couldn't understand. He was selfish. He wouldn't give William the interview. All he cared about was shagging a groupie, forgetting the fact that he had a girlfriend back in New York. He could have been an arsehole. But because Crudup is so innately likeable and so soulful and just has great facial expressions, you couldn't help but love the guy in the same way that William couldn't help but love him, even though he was dicking him around. Oh, I'm not going to give you the interview today. You've got to come to Cleveland. I can't. I've got to go home. No. You've got to come. But we, like William, couldn't help but love the guy. A brilliant performance by Crudup. Loved it.
I especially loved the acid scene when he climbs on top of the roof at those kids' parties, about to dive into the pool. I am a golden god!
And my final words will be so, so good. But everything, every scene he's in, I absolutely love. And I love the fact that he has the right intention. And even he is at the very point at the end of the film that gives it the go-ahead to publish every single word that William wrote. Because they completely shafted the guy. And what did you think when you saw some of these characters pop up? We had Dwight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Philip Seymour Hoffman as Lester Bangs.
So good as Lester Bangs. He's barely in it. He's only in, 4 or 5 scenes, but he's so good as this mentor.
He's still fucking cool when he's rocking out and like he's chastising Paulie Perrette's character for liking the Doors. He's fuck that. He's just so fucking cool.
I love the scene near the end of the film. I think it's after the band have screwed William over and he's on the phone to Lester. And he's saying, oh, the problem is, you know, you got in with the band and you started to think you're cool, but you're not cool. And he's like, but neither am I. Yeah, I love that, how he's kind of empathising. We're not the cool guys. We never will be.
People like us aren't cool. Yeah. That's why I'm in on a Saturday night. And it's so sad that he's no longer with us. But everything about that character, every single character is good. There's not a weak link in this film.
You've forgotten your favourite actress of all time, Fazuza Balak.
I was waiting for that.
Sella Bulk?
Who takes his V-plates, you know, that big moment of that scene when she's then just dancing and looks at the camera and I thought, Ben's going to have me about this all, Gemma. And it's going to be tweeted. And I don't want to mention her. But every character.
And again, there's other small ones, like Jay Baruchel's in it as a really little kid. Yeah. He's about 12 or something, isn't he?
Not forgetting Mr. Talk Show of America, Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon's, I didn't like him in this, to be honest. He's not a good actor. He's a good TV presenter, but he's too squirmy as an actor.
Did you ever watch his Saturday Night Live skits, and he was always the one that would just break face.
Without,
every single time.
Yeah, without doubt. The other one that made me laugh is the stoned DJ was played by Kyle Gass from Tenacious D.
Incredible.
I love that when he just passes out and they're just effing and jeffing.
Cool, man. And we also had Cam from Modern Family, who was on the old reception desk
stuff. In his first film role, apparently.
Bloody hell.
Hey!
Jinx, buy me a Coke.
One of my favourite scenes, which I have to talk about, is the plane.
So they're sitting
on the plane. The feeling isn't great between the band. They're all at kind of each other's throats. The T-shirt had come out with the wrong print, so you can only see one of the band members. They've been electrocuted on stage. They've took a new manager on board, which he's, you know, I love that moment when he comes in and he's like, well, we'll let you know. No. I'm here to see if I want it, and I'm going to wait outside. Fast forward to this plane scene when it's just about to crash. The pilot is going crazy. They're all holding tight and it's confession time. My Lord, you're sitting there going, can it get any worse? Can it genuinely get any worse? You've got Jason Lee's character admitting that he's slept with Crudup's wife, which is tense. We get people saying that he killed someone and doesn't know.
Jimmy Fallon,
The body was still there. And then we suddenly get the drummer.
Yeah.
I'm gay!
It's the first words he's spoken in the entire film.
Everything's fine now. We got through the turbulence and everything. We're back to him. We'll be landing in a minute. And it's just silent.
Yeah.
And that realization on his face of, I've just told the band I'm gay. It's gold. It's some of the best writing out there.
It's like a moment of clarity.
Yes.
When you think about this family that are supposed to be together and that are bonded by music, it goes to show that no matter how close you can be, you're never really honest with each other. There's a tinge of sadness about that scene.
And Mark, you've just mentioned there, it's some of the best writing. And I believe Cameron Crowe won the Oscar, didn't he, for best screenplay?
I believe he did, yes.
Good lad.
Yeah, so that's credit to him as the best you could ever get.
Yeah.
Do you know that there's a few things I have to go on here? So you know when the band were all there, and like you said, Ben, they probably wouldn't be touring with Sabbath. So the guys are all there in a huddle, and they pull William into the actual huddle before they go on stage. This is quite fascinating. The reason that they wanted to use this is Cameron Crowe, a lot of this is from his personal time of growing up and being a musician and also being a journalist. He was actually at Pearl Jam's Lollapalooza show, and the band themselves pulled him into this group Huddle before they did one of their biggest, most iconic shows in history. So he referenced it in his own film.
Yeah.
That's like me and you getting to go on Cemetery Pierce's tour and be pulled in.
Keep dreaming, pal. Keep dreaming.
Could you imagine if that was it? That would just to be there with the pissers.
With the hardcore piss heads.
And the most iconic scene for me, and I think this scene won't have done much for Ben, is the bus. They're sitting on the bus.
Aww.
Life is low, but they suddenly start singing together Tiny Dancer by Elton John. And yeah, even if you don't like the song, it's dead to
end. I didn't care for that scene.
No. Oh, that gave like a new life, because I hear that song and I'm like, yeah, it's good. It's got a bit of a weird title. I mean, who knows a Tiny Dancer, right? Am I right? But that song is gorgeous, and it's
so
just
iconic
when
now.
Each one of them starts singing along one by one, and it's like the ultimate come down to
it. Is the music then just heals everything?
Yeah.
And speaking of the music, I read something the other day that there are something like 50 songs in this film, which is far more than a usual film. And at the time of making this, the usual budget for music in a film was around $1.5 million, and the budget for making music in this was, I think, $3.5 million.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
And it was one of the first films that Led Zeppelin approved for them to use their music. And he did it by inviting them over to watch some of the scenes in the film. And Page and Plant loved it that much, they went, you can use it.
Cool.
Nobody gets away with using that. Only Top of the Pops. $3.5 million just on the music.
Yeah.
That's insane.
What a soundtrack, though. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. It's just, there's something for everybody in that soundtrack.
Yeah. And like you said, I've actually got, when you buy the DVD, you get the Stillwater EP.
Oh, cool.
It's worth listening to. It's pretty damn good.
Yes, Fever Dog.
I think I'm all, this is my moment, but I think I'm all out. I've enjoyed it. I'm glad you didn't hate it. That would have been quite tragic. But the scoring here is the big part. So, Ben, what do you reckon?
Well, I was going to give it a 7. But we've sat here and we've been talking about it and a lot of the great scenes and a lot of the great acting, and now I've decided it's a 6. No. I've realised that it's better than I think, and I reckon if I watched it again, I would enjoy it even more. I won't watch the 2-hour 40 cut again. That was too long. I'll watch the 2-hour theatrical cut.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it, and I think I will enjoy it more. So I'm going to give it an 8.
Thank you. Gemma?
I'm going to go one better, and I'm going to give it a 9. Killer soundtrack, killer acting, killer movie.
I have to give it a 10. It's my one of my favourite films of all time.
Oh, God, what the...
Down the middle, 9. 9 seems fair, because it's an 8.
Yeah.
Okay. So Almost Famous gets a skip to the end, 9 out of 10. That's a pretty... I'm very happy with
that. It's a
great score. Yeah, I like that. I felt good, and it's nice to know that we had a blast. Whose choice is it next?
It's mine.
Doesn't she forfeit her choice because she didn't turn up?
Yeah, Ben, week? You can have the... Yeah. So what is it, Ben?
Almost Famous again.
Theatrical version.
Yeah. Come on, then.
Okay, so on the next episode, we're going to be delving into some dark superhero, possibly good, but we don't know, kind of dark superhero film. So I've decided to go the other way and go for something bright, something colourful, something fun, something Studio Ghibli.
Oh, nice.
So on the next episode, our rewatch will be My Neighbour Totoro.
Love it.
Kakanori. It's now time for our pretty damn new game show, Kakanori. I really did enjoy listening back to the last one. Yeah. I thought it worked. It was good fun. If you haven't heard, stop now and go and listen to it, because it's a really good introduction to our new game show, but now it's round 2. I was the one that was playing last time, and I got a respectful 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now it's time for Ben to be in the hot seat.
Oh, dear.
This is a very unique game show, and Ben came up with the scoring to make it a bit more interesting. It's not all about head-to-head on the episode or teamwork. It's a bit different this time around. So what will happen is there'll be a games master, and for this episode, that's myself. I'll be reeling off basically a story or a plot to a film, but not very well done.
Bit
which isn't
shackle.
Hard for me. Yeah. You probably had to take some time to make it rubbish. I just did my best. So that gives you an idea of how it's going to be. Ben will be trying to guess this. Pretty simple game, you think. But the problem here is we have a judge. So this time round, Gemma's going to be the judge. As a judge, she can determine if my actual, you know, my stories or my plots are actually too hard or too ridiculous.
Or too cack.
Yes, that's the best way to put it. Yeah. And if they are, I will actually be deducted points, which sucks, because I think that 7 probably won't be a 7 by the end of today.
Let's find out.
But if Ben respectfully gets it right, does well, he's awarded a point. So he has a maximum of 10, because there'll be 10 CAC stories today. And I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yes.
At any time, you can get involved. If you think I've been fair, great. Let's see if you can beat the famous score of 7. Is that all right?
The famous score. Famous.
World famous.
Everyone
world.
Knows. Everyone also, knows
everywhere.
A 7.
People are getting tattoos. It's all over the shop.
7. Yeah.
Gemma's on -1 after last week, but you can't be affected this time round because you're not participating. You're the judge.
My name is judge.
So all you need to do is let me know when you're ready for your first story.
Oh, I'm ready, boy.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Here it goes. Bunch of midgets walk around for ages just to put his ring in something warm.
Well, it's Lord of the Rings, but I don't know that you should be using the word midgets.
There we go. Come on. It's a good start.
Didn't we have Lord of the Rings
last
week?
We did have Lord of the Rings last week.
Can we have an addendum to the rules? Because Mark's used one that Gemma lost last week. So I want the plus point, and Mark should have a minus point.
Are you really going to show
I am, because this has already been done, I'm afraid.
Unbelievable.
But you didn't use that great one.
The judge rules.
But you used that film.
The judge rules.
I hate you both. Is it really? Already I've lost a point.
You have.
And it's little people, not midgets.
Okay, that's fine.
So, Ben gets the point.
The second one. Boy snogs mum and almost becomes his own father.
Back to the Future.
Very good.
Yeah. That's,
happy with that?
I'm happy with that. That's good. A good one.
Oh, you're not shafting me this time then?
Because I came up with original answers, not okay. Like you.
2. Is that all right?
That's fine.
The third one. Boy gets friend-zoned for over 30 years. Gets legless. Eventually she likes him, but dies. The end.
Oh, God. Give me that one again, please.
Yeah.
Boy gets friend-zoned for over 30 years. So gets legless. She eventually likes him, but then dies.
I think I know what it is.
I don't know. Forrest Gump.
It is!
And yeah, that's a good one.
Isn't it Captain Dan that gets legless?
No, he's got, like, he can't walk, can he? He's legless.
No, that's...
Forrest Gump is legless. He's got splints on. He's legless.
He can still, his legs aren't
gone. No, he's legless.
He should lose a point.
Don't be cool.
These are terrible.
He's legless.
I'm going to keep the point. So
Thank
the
you.
Point stays there because I did get it, but I think you got slightly confused. And it's Lieutenant Dan that has magic
whatever,
legs.
Yeah.
It's fine. It goes.
Magicless. So, Ben is currently on 3 points and Mark is on 6.
Okay. Number 4. 2 mates go camping and get really close.
Not know what it is.
Brokeback Mountain.
Yes!
I'll allow that. That's good.
They were as close as 2 mates can get, I'd say.
Best friends.
The next one. Number 5. A doctor helps 3 friends become much closer.
Human centipede.
Yes!
That's brilliant. I'll allow that.
A teenager boy struggles because his body shoots white, sticky liquid everywhere.
Spider-Man.
That's very good.
I'm throwing
good.
The points away here, but it's all worth it.
And can I just add as well, you guys are actually tying 6 apiece right
shit.
Now.
I now need to shaft you.
I know, come on, boy.
You can't be changing them at last minute. Yeah. Stick to the script.
A guy is 2 guys.
Oh.
That's vague, isn't it?
That's very vague.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Fight Club. Come on.
I'm sorry. That was too hard.
Thanks,
Gemma. Sorry.
Thanks. Far too vague.
Really sorry. That could have been a myriad of films.
Yeah.
Do I lose the point?
You do, I'm afraid. You're on to 5 now. Oh, I'm catching you up. On my minus point.
Children help each other to come out the closet.
No, Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
He's got it. Faster.
I'll allow that.
That was great.
This is great. So, it's...
What? Ben is doing very well.
How many are left? 2.
Have we got 2 questions left?
I hope so.
So, at the moment... So Ben is now the most popular scorer with his popular score of 7. That famous score.
Well, famous score of 7.
Whereas Mark has now been down to 5.
I'm now worrying quite badly because I thought 7 was good and now I'm going to get thrashed.
Not so famous anymore.
A princess gets catfished.
I think I know, but I don't know.
Oh, that is a toughie. Oh, God, I can't even think of anything with a princess in. The Princess Diaries.
Aladdin.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I've got to deduct that.
What?
Why did she get catfished?
Yeah. Because she completely... that is awful, come on.
What's catfishing, Mark? Explain.
Yeah. Catfishing is when you go and meet someone and they're not who they make out to be.
So why is that true of Aladdin?
Because if you look in Aladdin, she's not the big... Oh, fuck, I've been shafted.
I'm sorry. The look on his face, just that split second, it was like your whole world fell apart.
I know.
That's not a whole new world for you.
Deduct a point.
I'm so sorry.
I'm on 4?
Yeah.
Okay, what's Ben on?
Ben's on 7. The judge rules.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Remember, I'm the judge next time.
Yeah, but...
The little smirk on his face then.
Old man abducts young boy and they both get really high.
Up.
Yeah.
That was very good.
That was very good.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
That was good. Oh, all change. So, on the leaderboard, top of the leaderboard is now Ben with 8 points.
Heyo.
Mark has gone to second place now, so you're in a silver position with 4. I'm still 4, right? But I'm still lagging with -1. I'm the only contestant on minus, so anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And next time round, Gemma, you're player.
Hey!
I'm the games master, and Marky Mark is the judge.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now it's time for some good old listener questions. So kicking things off, we have James Gain, who has said, which film would you like to watch for the very first time? So someone comes along, totally wipes your memory, you know nothing about it, and get to experience it again. That's tough, because it shouldn't be your favourite film. It should be...
I think my very first film that I watched was when I was 5 years old at the cinema, and I watched Bambi. And I remember at that age... I couldn't get over the colour, what I was seeing, the visuals, the music, the story, and it completely blew me away. So I'd kind of want to relive that.
See, Mark, you just said it shouldn't be your favourite film, but I am using my favourite film. I'm using Blade Runner, but in a very specific circumstance. Because I was, you know, 0 age when this film came out, I didn't see it at the cinema. When I eventually saw it in my teens, I think, I saw it on DVD or tape. I didn't see it at the cinema until a couple of years ago when it came out as a remaster. I would love to go back in time and see it for the first time at the cinema rather than at home.
Oh, yeah.
To truly enjoy it and experience it.
For that exact reason, then, I'm going to go with John Carpenter's Halloween.
Mm.
Because I wasn't around then. And just to see it on the big screen for that era and everything about it would have been breathtaking. Bit of a silly question, but a quick one. B. Gardner has said, if you had to watch movie 43 non-stop for 24 hours or never ever see another Star Wars film, which would you choose?
Oh, God. I think I'd have to take one for the team.
You would?
Yeah. I can't
have... Have you actually ever seen this movie 43?
Absolutely not, no. But I'm aware of how fucking terrible it is.
And not even in a good way, like The Room.
No, it's just meant to be utter dog shit.
Yeah, and no one should have to go... through their lives without watching Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. I would sit through movie 43.
Yeah, let's
I've
do
sat
it.
Through worse.
I don't want... I'm going to sound a twat, but maybe we do it as a rewatch just to experience it.
No.
Veto.
Yes. I've got a veto still.
You two have still got one. Yeah. Hey. Use mine. At Bad for the Fish, what movies out there did you not enjoy at the start, you didn't want to see them, but by the end you actually really enjoyed them?
There was a film from a couple of years ago called Brooklyn, starring Saoirse Ronan.
And I only saw
it because it was an Oscar contender, and I tend to watch all the Oscar contenders, but I wasn't into it at all. I didn't give a shit. But then actually watching it, loved it. I was blown away by how good it was and how great Saoirse Ronan is.
Hunger.
What, do you want some chips?
Yes. Throw us some dog food.
No, it was a film starring Michael Fassbender about the life and times of Bobby Sands, the chap who was... accused of IRA bombing in the 70s, and it's just sort of how he went on hunger strike. And yeah, it's not a film that, you know, you kind of want to go on a first date with, but by the end, it just left me gobsmacked. It's a beautiful and rich film. It's gorgeous.
Don't shoot me here. Usual Suspects. It took a long time. Oh. I wasn't really sold the very first time I saw it. I wasn't into films as much as I am now. But by the end, I was like, God damn.
I don't think you'll be able to enjoy it quite as much as anymore.
Okay, let's just move on. Midnight Smoke has said, what is the weirdest thing you've ever eaten at the movies or that you snuck into the cinema itself?
Oh, I'd love to say a roast dinner, but probably salted popcorn.
Is that it?
Oh, it's
food. Is that weird?
Food of the devil.
We've took in beers before, which is quite naughty inside. As when we went to see Star Wars Episode 7, we took about 10 cans each, like smuggled down our pants. That was a pretty good rucksack. That was good.
There's a cinema near us. It's not The View. It's a different one that is around the corner from an off-license. And in that off-license, they sell cans of Jack and Coke.
Oh,
and
yes.
They're perfect for sneaking into the cinema.
Oh.
No.
That's Jack Daniel's small cans of Coke.
Coca-Cola.
Yes. They're really good, though. I love the fact because they're just the right mix. It's perfect. Yeah. It's not too strong. Spot on.
You can get loads of, like, vodka. You can get gin in there as well.
Lee Johnson. Gin in there.
Just name all the booze.
Yes, everything.
That's alcohol. Yes.
Lee Johnson has said, what would be the ideal next Skip to the End merchandise? So in my opinion, I think we should do a hoodie at some point because hoodies are good. It's coming up to the winter now. And if you want to look cool and be warm, why not promote us at the same time?
I really want Skip to the End Funko Pops. Oh. I want little pop vinyls that look like us.
Action figures.
That
with
would
like,
be good.
You know, like sort of special weapons as well. So we could have like our brother's ciders and like, I don't know, you could have like Mark, you could have a dictionary and...
It'd be no good to him.
I'm trying to think what we can plug. We come with little pizzas from Domino's.
Yeah.
I would have an iPhone 10.
Yes, that would be good.
I'd have Converse shoes on.
I would definitely have like this, you know, like get the set as well. So you get the figure and you put it on the set. The set has a Sonos all around the house, a swimming pool, you know, Ferrari outside.
We'd
all
be wearing Sennheiser headphones.
Wait, definitely Sennheiser
are
headphones.
We turn into like a Barbie dollhouse here.
Barbie. Yeah.
Yeah. That's Barbie. Ken.
I like Ken. That'd be good. Tim Coleman's come with a couple of questions, all right? So the first one is, what's your favourite ever film about dreaming?
Inception.
Inception for me too. Or Nightmare on Elm Street.
Eternal Sunshine.
Oh, that's a great one.
Isn't that about memories rather than dreams?
He falls asleep at one point.
He's also said he's recently bought the Arrow version of The Thing, which is a really nice deluxe box set. It's got absolutely everything. Is there anything else now that you think deserves this sort of treatment as a reissue?
Oh, The Shining.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
A sick part of me would like to see Stanley Kubrick torture Shelley Duvall.
Oh, so you get all the making of the commentaries and everyone involved.
I mean, everyone pretty much went stir crazy filming that, so I would love to kind of delve in a little bit more into the world of The Shining.
See, I don't buy them, really. I don't buy Blu-rays or Steelbooks, but I know you're a big fan, Mark, so I'm going to throw this at you.
I'd probably want The Abyss.
Oh!
Because it's not actually out on Blu-ray, I don't think, or a decent quality version, and I want to get all the commentary and find out loads more about it, because it's a film that I think people don't respect enough. It's a bloody good one. At Lethal Juice has said, what film soundbite would you love to hear played in a lift just to see the expressions from the other passengers? I like how random our questions are.
I really like that question.
I'd like to be in a lift and then someone presses the button for the floor they want and then a little red light comes on and you hear, I'm sorry, Dave, I'm afraid I can't do that.
Shit, that's better than mine. I was going to say you push it, it's just, oh, hi, Mark, just every time because no one would know what the hell about. But then at the end of the year, everyone's going to be saying it.
Oh, as soon as the lift... You know when you kind of have like lift music going up? So I would want that lift music to be from Elf, where Buddy starts singing the song about his dad. You're my dad, and I love you, I love you, I love you.
Andrew Wallace has said, with the current trend of setting films in TV in the 80s, which right now we're demonstrating well with the Stranger Things and everything else, what franchise would you love to see get the 80s makeover?
None. I'm absolutely pig sick of it. So I think the new Transformers film, that Bumblebee one, is set in the 80s. I've heard rumours that Wonder Woman 2 is going to be set in the 80s. There's only so many fucking Rubik's Cubes you can see, man. I've had enough of it.
You're done to the...
Sick of it.
Do you know that John Cena is going to be in that film, which is just crazy.
How are we going to see him?
Exactly. On the posters, you won't be able to find him.
Shame.
That's a tough one, isn't it, really? What do you want to reckon?
I think it would be kind of cool if The Matrix was set in the 80s. So then rather than all this cool fluid motion, you'd have like Amstrads like programming people up.
And they'd be doing their hacking on a Commodore 64.
Yeah, come in on a Sinclair C5.
Let's go with what we've talked about loads today, Inception in the 80s. John T has said, which actor or director do you believe has fallen from the biggest height? By the way, no one is allowed to say Norbit.
Aww.
All of us, yeah. All three of us are ready. I've got to say it, and we've said it on a rewatch, Al Pacino. I'm sorry, but to go from that height of one of the most iconic, let's say, gangsters, that's what he was so good at, and serious roles, to Don Cacino.
Yeah.
No money in the world should ever, ever make him do that. I'm sorry, but it's still to this day, even though we covered it on the episode, it's still not been put to bed.
I'm just going to say it, it's Kevin Spacey.
Different kind of fall, though, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Jesus.
Where do I go from here? Yeah, he's done. It's all in the reports. I don't need to repeat what's been in the reports, but that's my answer.
I'm going to go with Halle Berry. She went from being an Oscar winner and a Bond girl to Catwoman. And then since then, she's done really shit TV shows. And now she's doing bit parts as pointless characters in the Kingsman movies. What happened to her?
It's disgusting, isn't it, really? Because they were good.
It's a pity, really.
Some real quick ones. Dan Wolf has said, is Blade Runner 2049 a skip to the end 10 out of 10 yet, Ben?
I don't know. I haven't seen it for a third time yet. Ask me after I've seen it for a third time.
Declan Hayes has said, guys, I want to know how big is your TV?
I've got a 55-inch 4K made by the brand LG. That's LG.
I've got a 55-inch Sony TV, but I also use a projector, so I have a 120-inch, so the room has never looked so big.
I don't know how big my TV is, but it's pretty, I think 36, maybe?
That's tiny.
I don't know.
I've got one of them in my toilet.
You actually have a bigger TV in your bedroom.
In my kitchen.
I don't know metric. I've just got a big TV and it's by Samsung.
So if you had a new TV, because it's probably time you upgrade, you would love either an LG or a Sony to be like me and Ben.
I would love to have an LG or a Sony too much TV. We're not selling out, by the way.
But not a Bosch, because they're shy.
Imagine we got sent one of them. Technica. Drop it. Aldi's own. Sarah Jane Hayward. You're in a monster movie. Which character would you choose to help you defeat the biggest monster ever?
Do you know what? I want to get Dad involved. I want to get Kurt Russell. Snake Plissken. If he can take down terrorists, he can take down monsters.
Can I echo him?
Go on.
Or we'll throw in Mike Myers, because he's a hard bastard and have our back. Let's be honest about it, he's fucking
not,
hard.
Not Michael Myers. Not the love gorillas.
Coming in going, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, Ripley, all day, every day. She's always the last one standing.
So that's it for the questions. Keep them coming. The best way is to go on skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there's our Instagram, which I've seen questions coming from, our Facebook, our Twitter, and email. So many emails come through. People don't realise we read everything you send us. So keep them coming, and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. But as you well know, the end is never quite the end. Before we finish off, we're going to hit you with Skip to the Recommend. That's where we come to you with our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something brand new that we've just experienced, or it can be something older that we've just experienced. But either way, we want you to experience it too. Mark, I'm going to throw it to you first time round. What is your Skip to the Recommend this week?
I've gone for something a bit different.
Oh.
I've gone for a board game, which is very random and very different. So, my friend Stu invites me over. He's one of my best friends from growing up. And we go around and we play these big, serious games like Risk and stuff that take hours.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the night, we were still not tired. So, he pulled out this game called Rhino Hero. Now, instantly, that was my reaction. I was like, this is ridiculous. So, what you do is you pick the cards from the box. I'm just going to... I've got this in front of you guys today. You don't need the instructions. So, what happens is this is a new set. But basically, you get these cards that you have to take. And what you have to do is build the tower for the rhino to go up, which sounds quite easy. But each card you pick, you might have to do two cards. So you bend the cards themselves to build this tower.
Right.
Then, when the other person takes a card, it could be a case of you have to then add at any point the rhino to the tower so it might fall over. You try doing this while having drink, okay? Then the card can be stuff like the other person then has to put two cards down so the tower can get to absolutely really high on the table. It's absolutely ridiculous, and trying to sell this to you two is insane.
It's great.
But I am telling you now, this is the best fun you'll have. I bought this game to then take to New York with my dad. We played in the hotel at the end of the night about three or four times. I left it there and bought a new one. It's that enjoyable. Everyone I've played it with thinks, this is ridiculous, Mark. It looks like something a five-year-old should have. It can be 5-minute games, 20-minute games. When you've had a few beers and you're sitting there, it's like Operation where you can't move. Some of the cards will say you can only use one hand. Some of the cards you have to do two hands. To move these cards and take one out, it is the most stressful thing you'll put yourself through. But as a board game, for the price of £6 on Amazon, I'm telling you now, we'll do this one night. We'll have some beers after we record, closer to Christmas, and we'll play this game. And both of you will be like, back on that episode 83, we thought you were an absolute dickhead and wasted your opportunity to sell something good. You will both love this. It's new to us. We haven't done a board game before.
No.
It is so much fun. And I think it's just the fact that you've got to really concentrate. And with your friends around you, you know it's going to be like, go on, Ben. Go on. He's going to drop it. He's going to drop it. It's brilliant.
I just want to know what the person who came up with this was smoking.
Something major. Look at the
Rhino,
look at this.
Here,
look
right.
at he's and he's saving his, a cat. Look, who's kind of in the?
He's got his hand on his hip. He's like he's a real sassy kind of hero.
And he looks like Donatello with that purple eye thing.
Yeah. Amazing! Yeah. It's so much fun, guys, and we'll have a game soon. Okay. These guys have become insane. It is so much fun. Trust me. And even my dad, who's 80, was like, "That's a great game. Brilliant."
I wasn't expecting you to come up with a prop
next week
then.
Dungeons and Dragons Warhammer 40,000. How's that then?
Very nice.
Ben looks shocked.
I'm speechless. I don't know what to say to Rhino Hero.
That's Rhino Hero. Ben's like, please don't send me some fucking game like that. There you go.
There we go.
Gemma, beat that.
Okay, so I'm going to go with some music for my recommendation. And of course, it's the soundtrack to Stranger Things, the music from the original series soundtrack. So it's currently streaming on Spotify, iTunes, and it's available to purchase on all good record stores in your local town.
There aren't many left. No, just HMV, that's it.
I'll just stream it then. But it's a glorious 80s love fest that reminds you how bloody extraordinary music was of that time. But it's also an extension to the world of Hawkins. So we've got some really cracking songs like The Bangles, you've got Devo, you've got The Police featuring Sting. So Sting is cool.
All the kids love him.
Of course. But it's just a good throwback, you know. It puts you back in the Upside Down. It makes you think of a way on how to beat the high score on Dig Dug. But it's also, I want to do a shout out to the original score as well. So that's also available. And that's by Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein. And they do this beautiful synth-like music that one moment it can sound really dreamy and really lovely and warm and glowy. But then another piece of music can make it sound really dark and menacing and terrifying. But it's just a great soundtrack to accompany an otherwise fantastic two seasons. I'm really surprised because I thought one of you was going to come up with season two on the Skip to the Recommend.
Well, while we've got the time, let's have a little brief chat. Have we all seen season two now?
Yes.
Thoughts?
Love, 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 love.
Episode 7 was wank.
Is that when 11 went off with those little stereotypical punks?
That was all that about.
The worst piece of shit I've ever seen.
That was...
Let's pretend it didn't happen.
Let's not mention that.
The rest of it was great. I love the fact you've mentioned the soundtrack because for me it's the closest thing you'll get to like a modern day John Carpenter sound with those synths.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what I think.
It's beautiful.
The acting. The acting is on another level. Is it Millie Brown?
Millie Bobby Brown,
yeah.
She is the best thing on TV right now.
All the little kids are great. I love that they focus more on Lucas and Dustin this time around. We got to see more of them. We got to see Steve do a face turn.
Steve's the ultimate soccer mom looking after all the little kids. I love him so much.
When they came out in those Ghostbusters outfits, I was like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And the fact that Funko now do those... I'll be honest, if you could send us all of those for times free, we'd gladly accept that.
And also, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it, can we take a moment to remember the ultimate superhero, Bob Newby?
Oh, I loved Sean Astin as Bob Newby. He was so good.
What a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Again, an actor we've not seen for ages.
Yeah.
Absolutely ages.
I think there was a little throwback to the Goonies as well during his little sort of time out there. I loved it. It just... Just the whole thing, the whole show was fantastic. It was a real binge-worthy kind of show. You watch one episode, you wanted to watch it immediately again.
Which is what I did. I watched the whole season in one go.
Yeah, apart from episode
eight. It was only nine episodes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Eight or nine.
Let's forget about seven.
But even the ending, it made me go, yes, come on!
Now you've got to wait a year.
Show.
Minimum.
Yeah.
Come on then, Ben. Have you got a game show?
A game? I have, yeah.
Come on, Cluedo.
I've got Kaplunk.
That was a good game.
It was great. Classic.
I was going to go with a film that I haven't even seen, and I'll tell you for why. I was looking through Netflix the other day, and I got to a film, and the title shocked me. So the title of this film is Our, O-U-R, Souls, S-O-U-L-S, At Night. And then I just read that out to myself, Our Souls at Night.
Nice.
And I thought this must be a spoof film that they've given a spoofy name, because no one's going to call a film something that is pronounced as Arseholes at Night. It isn't. It's a serious American drama starring Robert Redford and Jane Fonda. And I'm sure in America they don't pronounce it that. They would say Our Souls.
Yeah.
But in England, it's Arseholes at Night. Which is just fucking extraordinary.
The fact you hadn't watched it, you were still going to bring it and advertise it to hundreds of thousands of people. Arseholes at Night.
Arseholes. So look, if you've got nothing better to do, go and watch Arseholes at Night.
I hear they have a full moon in that film.
Do you know what? I might watch it now just because you've mentioned it.
But that's not my actual pick. Oh. I'm going with the TV series that I've actually mentioned a fair few times on this show, but I've never given it the full recommend treatment. And it's a show called Halt and Catch Fire.
Okay.
It's an absolutely amazing show, and it's about the burgeoning home computer market in the early 80s. And as the series progresses, it then becomes about the birth of the internet in the early 90s. And that sounds like a really dry thing for a drama to be about, and it is on the surface. But it's so much more than that, because it's a character study. And it's about four magnetic leads. So you have Lee Pace, who plays Joe, and he's a Steve Jobs-like figure. He's an ideas man, and he's so focused on his goals that he can't help but hurt all the people around him. You then have the great Mackenzie Davis, who we mentioned earlier. She plays Cameron. She's a young, punky programmer who's idealistic, and her idealism often conflicts with her professionalism and her materialism of her colleagues. You've got Scoot McNairy, who plays Gordon. He's a talented but self-pitying engineer who's constantly frustrated by his own lack of success. And then finally you have his wife, Kerry Bichet, as Donna, who's a fellow engineer, and she's saddened that her ambition has had to take a backseat to being a wife and a mother. And the show is about the personal and professional ups and downs of these characters and the relationships that are built and destroyed, the companies that are built and destroyed over the course of around 10 years. It's superbly written, and the acting is some of the best you will ever see in TV or in any medium, TV or film. The four leads are absolutely flawless. Toby Huss as well plays another character in it. He's brilliant. It's amazing to think that a show about such a kind of boring, theoretically boring thing is so gripping. There were four seasons. It was on AMC in the US, and it's just finished, or a few weeks ago. All four seasons are now available on Amazon Prime in the UK, so you can go away and watch all of these. There are only 10 episodes per season, so it's only 40 hours of your life. You can binge through them quite easily, and I really say you should. The first season isn't great. It's good, but not great, because they didn't entirely know what they wanted to be. The first season is kind of like a Mad Men knockoff. It's, you know, it's a period piece, and the character of Joe is kind of a Tesco value Don Draper. You know, they wanted it to be Mad Men in that way. But around halfway through season one, they course corrected. They realised what the show was really about. And one of the things they did in the course correction was bringing the women to the fore, bringing the characters of Donna and Cameron. Once it was more about them than the fellas, it really found focus. And the final season, season four, is... I'm not ashamed to admit there was an episode where I actually wept.
What?
Which you'll know.
Ben
cried. It's so moving and just so beautifully made, and I just implore people to go out and watch it. And there's a line that Joe in the show, he uses a couple of times, and he says, "Computers aren't the thing. They're the thing that gets you to the thing." And that's kind of the ethos of the show. You know, it's not about computers. It's about these characters. Computers are just the thing that gets you to the thing. Same with season one. Not great, but it's the thing that gets you to the thing. Stick with it. Watch the whole thing. I absolutely love it. And it was cancelled in America after season three. But luckily, AMC, because no one was watching it, frankly. But luckily, AMC said, "We're not just going to cancel you outright. We're going to give you a season four so you can tie it all up." So the story ends just amazingly. The final couple of shots are as good as anything you will ever see in a TV finale. Please, for the love of Christ, watch Halt and Catch Fire. It's amazing.
It sounds like a serious version of Silicon Valley.
Yeah, it kind of is. It you know, it deals with the same kind of territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
How do you sell it any better than that? I will watch it.
It's no Rhino Hero, I'll tell you that much.
I'm telling you now, you'll knock it. When we play it, you'll both be like, fair player, now I know.
Now and I know, I can be a Rhino Hero.
Don't you like we change it a bit? We've had books, we've had CDs, we've had soundtracks, we've had art books, we've had TV, podcasts. And now you've had a little board game. Mm. That's the surprise element of Skip to the Recommend.
Indeed.
I will try and up my game for next episode.
Speaking of the next episode, what have we got coming? It was my topic choice, and we're going with our top three cinematographers, also known as directors of photography. So go out there, do a bit of research, and please, on Twitter, on Facebook, etc., give us your responses.
And the rewatch for the next episode is going to be a Studio Ghibli classic, My Neighbour Totoro.
Oh, amazing.
And on how not to do cinematography, we will be watching, as our main review, Justice League.
Yes.
I'll say it like Justice League.
Justice
the
League.
Probably biggest thing that DC have ever done.
Yeah.
The world is going crazy because it's their chance to show they're up there with Marvel. And it's about time for us to be proven wrong, I think.
I'm not optimistic.
No.
we shall see. We'll also be playing the third and final round of Kakanori, in which I will be the games master, Gemma will be the player, and Mark will be the all-powerful judge.
I've got to actually put down some time this week to work out how, by the scoring system, I can still win it. I need to do a lot of, oh, that's no way, that's not fair, you get penalised. I've got to do something big.
I suppose you could. It would involve me doing a lot of bad clues. The only way you can win is if I come up with a lot of bad clues.
But if I
let's
ran
be honest,
them as
I'm not
bad, you know what I mean? Like everything, that you could be the best one ever and I could say, no, Ben, sorry.
Well, I will flip a fucking table if I have to. Well...
And the last two game shows have been a draw. So if Kakanori was a draw, let's see what happens. Stick around.
Stick around for
that. Well, speaking of shaft jobs, on the next Movie Masturbate, we're going to be debating over Brad Pitt.
That's going to be a tough one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can we have an easy one soon? Because it's been a tough, tough few weeks of picking.
You get what you get. It's the luck of the draw.
It's the luck of the draw.
And I've said it on the competition. I'm not exaggerating. I've now told these two off air what the prize is.
Mm-hmm.
Just, if you love Funkos and you love pop vinyls, just bloody listen because it's life-changing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big one. And we'll have all the usual stuff that you're a big fan of here at Skip to the End. We'll have listener questions. We'll have another Skip to the Recommend, of course. So please tune in 2 weeks' time. All the clothes are time to dance. Oh, man.